Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Aerial Helwanis MMA Show!
Monday, October 22nd, 2018. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. Hope you had a lovely weekend. Hope you're enjoying the fall weather wherever you may be, unless you're in Australia, where I think it's starting to become summer. And if that is the case, I'm very jealous. It's very cold outside. I can't handle it. People think I'm Canadian. I can handle it. I can't really handle it. If I could, I would move out west. I would have summertime 24/7, 365, all year, all day, every day. But alas, that is not the case. Anyhow, we have a lot to discuss. It was a relatively quiet weekend in MMA. There was just the PFL playoffs. There was some news here and there. But you remember at the end of last week's show, I said, hey, I hope it's a quiet week. Guess what? It was a pretty quiet week. We've got a lot to discuss on today's program with a lot of interesting people. We have two in-studio guests. We've got the post-show coming up. We even have a surprise interview after the post-show. Much to look forward to. Let me run down today's lineup, and then we'll get to our first guest of the day. Valentina Shevchenko at 3:45, the newest member of ONE Championship. Eddie Alvarez at 3 o'clock. Darren Till at 2:45. Michaela Mayer, 2016 Olympic boxer, in studio at 2:05. Megan Anderson will be on at 1:45, 1:50-ish. Ally Quinta, who faces Kevin Lee in Milwaukee at 1:35. Ryan Bader at 1:20. But first, without further ado, let us not waste any time. Probably the biggest news of the week happened late Friday when we found out that the co-main event for UFC 230, Luke Rockhold versus Chris Weidman, has been canceled. Rockhold injured his right knee, injured his left shin again, and also broke his nose. Very quickly, the UFC booked a fight that I've been dreaming about for quite some time. Ronaldo Jacare Souza against Chris Weidman as the new co-main event. That's the fight I wanted from the get-go. Let's talk to Chris about this. He joins us now on the phone. Christopher, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's great to talk to you. So, by the way, we haven't talked about this publicly. When did we change from at Chris Weidman UFC to at Chris Weidman? I like this. It's big picture thinking on social media. Very nicely done on your part. When did that happen?
I think my manager did that. Jim Walter did that when I signed with him. He thought it was like a good idea.
That's a job well done.
Yep.
I feel like this is a sign of perhaps things that, like, you sort of looking past just being a UFC. You should never tie your name just to your employer. That doesn't make sense, in my opinion.
I agree. There's definitely you definitely could argue for that.
Yeah, I'm sure you thought you'd be talking about this right off the bat, but no. The most important thing is you versus Jacare, UFC 230. When did you find out that Luke was out?
When did that news break? Friday?
Yeah.
Was it Friday? About Friday, I was getting ready for a workout at 4 o'clock. It was about like 3:45. I was ready to go through a hard workout, and we actually just were talking about different strategies for Luke, and we were going to be working them in that session. I've won the boy in, and I was on the toilet, and also my manager called me and texted me. I'm like, answered it, and he said, I have some information for you that you're going to need some processing for. And I'm like, oh, crap.
Literally.
And he said, Luke got injured. He's out for 6 months. At least that's what I guess he thought at first, or was told. And and they want you to fight Jacare. And they would, after you win, and they're going to fly you out to Australia to do something, possible for be ready to be a replacement for the main event, which, I mean, all that stuff was nonsense to me anyway, because I knew, I beat Luke. I was fighting for the title anyway, so it's not like, it was extra incentive. But it was a no-brainer. I was pissed off, obviously, at first. I really was prepared for Luke. I've been focused on this fight for a long time. I was really excited for it, to get that rematch. I felt really good about that fight. So I went into the gym and then talked to Ray, and I mean, I'm in really good shape. I've really haven't felt better than this. I've been training for probably about 14, 15 weeks pretty hard. And I believe I'm the best guy in the world. So whoever they throw in front of me on the day of the fight, you know, I'm ready to go out there and beat and show that. So Jacare is a tough opponent, brings a lot to the table. And he's been a guy who's been on my radar for such a long time anyway. So it's definitely another exciting fight for me.
Was Jacare the only name that was presented to you?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And I said at the top, this is a fight that I've always wanted to see for some reason. I think because of how good, you know, back when you started, how good of a grappler we knew about your grappling and how you were kind of this prodigy, ADCC, all that stuff. Is this a guy that you've been watching for a long time, long before you were in the UFC and said, oh, it'd be fun to compete against him?
Yeah, actually, when I did the Abu Dhabis in 2009, he had a super fight during that tournament, I think against Drysdale. He actually was cornering when I was in the semifinals of the Abu Dhabis in my weight class against Andre Galvao, who at the time obviously was a couple, you know, maybe I don't know, 5-6 time world champion. And we had a really good match, and Jacare was in his corner. And, you know, obviously he was in my weight class, he was in Strikeforce, I was in the UFC, and like, you know, I felt like at some point we were definitely going to fight. And so here we are.
Has the UFC told you guys, I know you said you didn't really care about the standby stuff, but is this a number one contender fight?
I mean, yes. I mean, I win this fight, I'm fighting for the title. I mean, I was definitely, you know, obviously close to fighting for the title before this fight, just beating Gastelum and finishing him. It was between me and him who was going to be fighting Whitaker. They decided to go with Gastelum. And, you know, so I go out there and I do my thing against Jacare. I don't think there's a question.
This card has been, you know, it's been a roller coaster just getting to November 3rd. You know about the whole main event thing. You've remained relatively quiet when it came to all of this. Diaz, Poirier, Cormier sliding in there against Lewis. What do you make of the card? You fought on that first card. It was legendary. Of course, you headlined in on Long Island. But this is not exactly, like, as far as depth, like those two first events at MSG. What do you make of the card now?
I mean, I'm obviously worried about myself and going out there and getting a win. That's the most important thing to me. But I still think, you know, sometimes these cards that don't end up looking great on paper end up becoming the best cards, you know, in history. So MSG has a funny way of making fights really exciting and creating history. And I wouldn't be surprised if this card ends up becoming one of the best cards of all time. There's definitely some exciting fights on the card, and some curveballs thrown in there with the Black Beast coming out against Cormier for the title. So there's definitely some exciting stuff to look forward to.
How is your hand/thumb feeling?
I feel great. Yep, my thumb healed up, and you know, it took a long time. Obviously, I had two surgeries. That's why I was out. But that's why I started camp so early. I really wanted to make sure my thumb was good and get the sparring in and really be able to grapple and punch with it and be okay and feel confident with it, and I did that. So, but it ended up healing perfect.
You've had some year-long layoffs in your career, a little more than a year. This is one of the longer ones. Are you, you know, the ring rust thing is always interesting. Like, Dominic Cruz vehemently against the idea of ring rust. John Kavanaugh telling me a couple weeks ago that he thought it maybe played a little bit of a factor in Conor McGregor's game. Are you the kind who feels like it will take a couple of minutes just to get your bearings in there?
Nah, I don't think so. You know, I think the more you're able to meditate on, like, the fight and, you know, visualize, and the more you could spar and put yourself in that fight scenario in your mind, and in the gym, if you dumb it down to just another sparring session, which I like to do when I head into fights, then I don't think there really is, like, you know, the ring rust thing. If you try to avoid the thought of being in a fight in your mind leading up to a fight, because it kind of makes you anxious and nervous, and you're not putting that mental practice in heading into a fight, I think it can affect you. But I haven't steered clear of the visualizations of the fight leading into this one, and so I'm ready to go. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah. No, I get it.
Okay, all right. I didn't know if I just sounded crazy with that, but...
You're trying to say because you're a fighter, I've never fought before, I wouldn't understand the complexities of what you're saying. Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm just saying, like, because obviously you got the mental and the physical, and there's been times where I've avoided thinking of the fight leading up to a fight, you know, because it makes you anxious, and it's just like, you know, it gets you excited, and at the end of the day, it really just comes down to that day of the fight anyway, so why are you putting this time and energy into thinking about it all the time if you can't change what's going to happen in that fight at that time anyway. But I changed my mindset with that a little bit. I like to think about it as much as I can, actually, and, you know, just make sure that, you know, just like I would be doing physically, putting the practice in physically, I'm doing it mentally too. So when I get in there, it's already something I've already gone through.
Luke's a southpaw, Jacare orthodox. How much does that change the next couple of weeks?
You know, when I first started the camp, actually, we didn't have that many southpaws, so I did a lot of boxing sparring straight up with orthodox guys, and obviously it's easier to find orthodox people for training and easier for, you know, coaches to hold orthodox for pads. It really doesn't make that much of a difference. You know, both guys are good on their feet. Both guys are very dangerous on the floor. They both bring that problem to the table. I know what I bring, and it's really just the just go out there and do my thing. You know, it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's a fight, it's a fist fight, and it doesn't matter what side the guy has forward. You gotta try to beat him up. That's it.
The Rockhold fight, I know, was somewhat personal for you, right? Because he's the guy who beat you for the belt, and you were supposed to rematch, and then you got hurt. And now here's the opportunity to come back against him after the layoff, and you told us you were annoyed that you were passed up. And he represents a lot. You don't have that same sort of connection to Jacare. Does it feel like a bit of an emotional letdown that the guy you'll be facing is not Rockhold, since this, there's like such a rich history between you two at this point?
Nah, I mean, honestly, with Rockhold, I wasn't making this personal in my mind. I wasn't thinking of it that way. I wanted that rematch. I wanted redemption, just because I'm super competitive, and I know I wasn't at my best in that first fight with him. I know I could have done better, and I know I could beat him, and I wanted to be able to prove that and have that second shot of doing it. All the other crap, everything that was said back and forth, I don't care as much as I do about just competing and being who I think I am. And so, it's the same thing with Jacare. You know, this is more of a pure, I feel like it's probably going to be more of a pure martial art contest, less, you know, trash talk, less people thinking of, you know, trash talk. I know I wasn't going to be, you know, I wasn't going in there taking it personal and getting emotional or anything like that. But in this one, I feel like it's really just a martial arts, dream scenario. I mean, definitely have two really good athletes that are good everywhere, accoladed in multiple areas. So I think it's definitely going to be an exciting fight, and that a lot of the purists could get excited about.
I have to say, a part of me is surprised that I even got a few minutes with you here this Monday, because just like perusing on your Instagram daily, which I usually like to stalk, sometimes I'll slide into the DMs, as you know, you'll ignore me, but I see that you saw it because it says seen. But you're always with celebrities. Like, there was a...
Let's just say that's a lie.
What do you mean?
Sliding into my DMs with no reply? Come on, stop that.
It's like one out of every five. You know, I try to encourage. But anyway, like, you're working out with Kevin James.
It rhymed a little bit. You almost got me rapping on that.
You're hanging out with Enes Kanter doing workouts. It's like always celebrities. Your life is amazing. You're always with the A-listers. I love it. What were you doing with Kevin James for that stretch? It seemed like you were his personal trainer for a minute.
Man, Kevin's one of my good friends at this point. We've been really close friends for like, I don't know how many years. Almost 5 years. Us and our families are really close. We went to Rome together. We get the families together all the time, so we're just close friends. He's definitely a mentor to me in a lot of ways, and we feed off each other. And he's extremely successful, so he has a lot of things that he helps me and teaches me. And then obviously, I try to help him with the physical sometimes, making sure he's staying in shape, and we just try to keep each other accountable. But he's an awesome guy, obviously super talented, and just a really good person to be friends with.
And you and Enes Kanter are workout buddies now? I know you were helping him with some basketball moves, but then I saw him at the gym too.
Oh, that guy, what energy that guy has.
Yes.
Unbelievable. The Knicks are super lucky to have him. Just a guy who's really proud to be in New York. Doesn't back down with the whole Turkish thing. I mean, with the Turkish regime politically, he's not afraid to stand up for himself and his countrymen. And I don't really understand. I haven't really dove in to understand what's really going on with that, but I give him a lot of credit for not being afraid and standing up for himself.
Yeah,
and it's definitely pretty impressive. And the guy, he's a freaking monster. I mean, he came down to our gym and we put him through a workout, and you know, got his hands looking sharp, and did a circuit training workout, and I was blown away. So I kind of could judge somebody how strong they are not by like bench or squat, more like pull ups. And a guy who is 6'11". I was thinking maybe the guy gets 3 pull-ups in. I'm pretty sure he hit 20 pull-ups, and we did multiple sets. I was blown away about how strong he is. I mean, as a wrestler, I grew up my whole life doing pull-ups, so pull-ups is one of my top things. And he was right there with me, back and forth, and I'm like, this guy, he's a freak. That guy's a freak.
I have to say, just talking to you less than 2 weeks before your long-awaited return, I was at Nassau Coliseum a couple weeks ago for the Fedor fight. Saw Mr. Weidman, by the way. That was a pleasure. That's the last time we saw you fight. Just knowing, like, I feel like, you know, as I've told you, Won't Back Down, one of the all-time greats in terms of walkout songs. But if you could sprinkle in a little Roy Jones Jr., Y'all Must Have Forgot. Cause I feel like you are one of the most sort of like forgotten guys in that division. Maybe even in the UFC at this point. Like, just to have Weidman back at MSG to exercise the demons of UFC 205, the dream matchup against Jacare. I'm more excited now about this fight. Like, I'm sorry that it's at Luke's expense, but this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. To me, this is the people's main event of UFC 230. This is a really big deal. I'm getting excited just hearing you. Like, we've been through so much over the past year and a half. This is a very exciting development. That's all. I didn't have a question. I just wanted to say that.
I appreciate you amping me up, man. I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. And if anybody forgot, November 3rd, in less than 2 weeks, I will definitely refresh your memory. And I have a long road to go as far as my goals and what I want to accomplish in this sport. And I'm excited to go out there and share with everybody. So it's going to be a fun night.
Do you believe in the exercising demon things, like going back and righting the wrong? I know you're a religious guy, but do you believe in that sort of thing?
Righting the wrong. I mean, I'm super competitive, and fights, you know, they seem more personal, and there's trash talk and everything, but I'm ultimate competitor. Like, I love what I do. If I was to go back and do everything all over again, I wouldn't change a thing. As far as what I do for a living, you know, I'm not one of those guys who walk around thinking, oh man, I should have chose golf. You know, you make more money and your body feels fine. I don't think there's anything more powerful than the absolute competition of mixed martial arts. You know, every martial art that's ever been around, one-on-one, I'm more of the type of athlete that needs that physical, threat. I don't know what word I'm looking for, like thrashing. I just need, I need to be either tackling people. Like, football would be something like another type of sport. I need something really like a brutal type sport. And, I'm just so blessed to live in the era where UFC is legalized and this is something I can do for a living. I love what I do. I'm excited to be able to share it with the world.
And now to tie it all together before we say goodbye, as I said, you dropped the UFC from your name because at some point you're going to have to transition out of this sport. You're great on camera.
Can you stop
what?
Doing that?
What?
You're an instigator. I know what you're doing right now.
What am I doing?
It wasn't this super conscious decision that was
I'm not instigating. I'm trying to give you props.
You started the interview with it. Now you're finishing the interview with it. You
I'm about to plug your special on MSG and say that you're a phenomenal host and you're great on camera, and I'm a big fan of Weidman's World that airs on MSG, my second favorite network behind ESPN, three-part series that I thought was going to be canceled when Rockhold dropped out, but they're still keeping it on. My friend Larry Torres told me this earlier today, and now you're going to crap on me for that? Wow. Wow. Here I am giving you a plug, unsolicited plug.
It's a small thing. I know it's a small thing. And then you finished strong, though. I appreciate it. But I had to stop you before you got to all that. I knew you were going to finish strong because you're the best. But
well, thank you.
I had to stop you on that one again.
All right. Well, MSG has an all-access series. They've been following you. You have this special called Weidman's World. It's going to be a three-part series leading up to November 3rd. And the timing was horrible because the news release came out like an hour before the Rockhold news came out. But they tell me it's a bit of a curveball, but they're going to still air it after Knicks games and whatnot. So I'll be watching because I watch all the Knicks games, watch them lose every night. It's great. And I love that they're getting behind you. I love that they're getting behind you like this. This is awesome. Even though you insulted me at the end, I am still going to watch it.
Did I insult you?
You said I'm instigating. What am I doing? I'm giving you props for having the foresight to drop the UFC and just be Chris Weidman.
Is instigating a bad thing? Is that negative?
I feel like there's a negative connotation. Yes.
Is it because you've been called out on instigating things before, and you kind of took it as an insult because it was under some severe
unfairly? I would say unfairly. I was accused of it unfairly.
I don't mean to hit a nerve that has been hit before, but maybe this is small in the when it comes to everything else. But I'm just messing with you, man. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, I have to say once again, it's great to have you back, and it's good to hear from a Long Islander. Sad day today, Charles Wang passing away, longtime owner of the New York Islanders. So it's good to hear from a Long Islander. My man Jake in the back is a huge fan of yours. You know about Charles Wang, right? You heard about that?
Of course. You know, Wonderboy actually did a private lesson in his complex, and I think it's in Lloyd Harbor on Long Island. I mean, he was telling me he went there and did with his grandson, or I think it was his grandson he did a private with, and he had the largest Chinese garden in America, world, something crazy. But yeah, he was telling me about how nuts that house was.
Wow, that is incredible. Well, my condolences to the Wang family. I know Islander fans are fans of his and appreciate that he kept the team in New York. Chris, I appreciate the time. As always, much love. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Thanks for doing this. I know you're a very busy man. You don't have time for us rinky-dink MMA shows, so thanks for squeezing us in on this Monday afternoon.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, and thanks for having me up.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. There he is, Chris Weidman stopping by, the potential number one contender in the middleweight division. He faces Jacare Souza on Saturday, November 3rd, Madison Square Garden in the People's main event. Now, before we move along to our next guest, let me tell you once again about our good friends over at Stamps.com. As you know, these days you can get practically everything on demand, like this show. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know that you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. There's that music that I love. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package, all available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. I have told you this once, I've told you this twice, I think I've even said it three or four times. It's easy peasy lemon squeezy. You don't have to be some kind of internet / computer expert. Stamps.com, easy as heck, try it out. I'm not steering you wrong. So right now, use MMA for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in MMA. That's Stamps.com. And once again, enter the code MMA. Support them because they support us. All right, let us move along now and say hello to our next guest. What a big weekend for him. 2 weekends ago here in the tri-state area, he defeated Matt Mitrione in the semifinal of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix. Officially announced last week that he will meet Fyodor Emelianenko on January 26th at the Forum in Inglewood, California in the final to see who will become the Bellator Heavyweight Champion. If he wins that fight, he will then become Bellator's first ever double champ. He is the light heavyweight champion in Bellator. He is Ryan Darth Bader. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing great. What about you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for doing this, Ryan. By the way, when you had your intro before the Mitrione fight, two Fridays ago, they had a little like Star Wars thing in there. Was that the first time that you've done that before?
Yeah, they kind of shot like a little something, you know, when they were kind of doing the countdown show. I didn't get to see it at all, so I didn't know if it looked good or not.
Yeah, I don't remember you doing that. So you didn't, you don't even hear the music when you're about to walk out?
Well, they've always done the music. I hear the music. I hear like the, you know, the Darth.
Okay.
You know, at the beginning, then it kind of goes into my song, the Pain in Black, whatever. But I don't know if they did, we shot a little something in a dark room, kind of, with the hood up, kind of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't see that TV behind me when I'm walking out at all.
What's fascinating is the fact that you're like the complete antithesis of, you know, Darth Vader, right? Like, you're just such a, like, happy guy, you know, kind of nice guy. You know what I mean? Is that why you got the nickname to begin with?
Well, one thing, you know, it was kind of from wrestling days. There's a guy, you know, wrestling at ESU, there's a guy that would always call me Darth, and I went to, the first MMA gym I went to, they started calling me Darth also, so it kind of stuck. That or Masturbator, so went with Darth.
When you signed up for this tournament, and I hate to use the word easy, but it does feel like it has been relatively easy for you. Did you think it would go this way, like that it would be such a walk in the park for you?
Well, my first fight, you know, obviously you never go in there thinking it's going to end in 15 seconds, you know. So first punch I threw, ended up, you know, knocking out Team Mo, and then the next fight, you know, fighting a legit heavyweight, you know, big boy, 255 pounds, which everybody at the beginning of the tournament had winning the whole thing was a favorite. One of the best, you know, heavyweights in Baltimore right now, you know, going out there and putting on them and grinding them out. I saw myself going through the tournament. I saw myself winning. I saw the different matchups and potential matchups the different styles, really, that I was going to have to fight. You know, first a wrestler that has good hands, and then, you know, a big boy, a big heavyweight, true heavyweight, moves well on the feet. I always thought I was going to go through this tournament, win this tournament. But, yeah, I mean, nobody predicts a 15-second knockout. I thought I was going to handle Matt, definitely on the ground. That's what I did. And, you know, I'm enjoying it so far.
Considering how well it's going for you in the cage, and I'm sure not having to weight cut for the first time in a very long time is a pleasure as well, is there any chance that you just stay at heavyweight past the tournament?
You know, I don't know. Like, originally, my thoughts were to, you know, win these two belts and then drop down and defend the light heavyweight and then defend the heavyweight. You know, but who knows when that actually happens. You know, I go out there, I win this fight. There might be a more intriguing matchup at heavyweight, or Bellator might want me to stay at heavyweight, or it makes more financial sense to take a heavyweight title fight. So right now I want to defend both, because making 205 for me is not that difficult. But at the same time, we'll see when we get there.
Like, what do you walk around at?
About 235 right now.
Okay, wow. So probably dating back to when you were a kid, like the last time you probably didn't have to cut weight, so to speak, quote unquote, probably like a decade or two decades ago, right? I mean,
I couldn't even tell you when, you know, it'd be when I was a, you know, a little kid, in high school, college. I mean, college, I was walking around at 220. I was getting down to 197, you know, and then, yeah, I'd get down a little lower in mid-season, but that was every weekend, you know. And so for me, honestly, all this last camp, I was upwards of like 238, 239. But when kind of the fight week kind of rolls around, I'm able to do strength and conditioning further into my camp, whereas 205 I had to cut back because that's what keeps weight on me. But, you know, I rolled into fight week, and my body naturally probably drops a good 7-8 pounds, just, you know, whatever it is, just kind of getting in the zone. So when I weighed in, I was 229, you know, so, but I was heavier than that during camp for sure.
Obviously, you know, Fedor isn't who he once was, but I still feel like he has that aura. For someone who's been in the sport now for a while, just squaring off against him after his win over Chael, what is that like?
Yeah, it's kind of surreal. You know, he's one of my favorite fighters of all time. I loved watching him. You know, and just thinking back when I was competing in you know, wrestling and whatnot, and fast forward to being across, you know, the cage from him and squaring off with him and about to fight him, not only for the, you know, heavyweight championship, but in a tournament style format, one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. It's just it's a real experience. But I kind of put that in the back of my head though too, because I've been in there with everybody, you know, in MMA. And so for me, it's just, you know, it's just a guy wanting what I want. Competition, I got to go in there to take him out, but it's definitely a super cool experience. And when he won that fight, you know, he looked great. And then when he won that fight, I was really excited because, you know, I get to get in there and compete with him for the world title.
I heard a lot of people after his fight, including my colleague Gilbert Melendez, who said that they thought that was the best he's looked in a while, that he sort of turned back the clock. You were there cage side, and clearly you've watched him for a while. Did that seem like the old Fedor, or is that guy long gone?
No, I think he still has it. You know, he's always dangerous. That's one thing you can't take away from him. You know, look at what he did to, you know, Frank Mir, who's big, big boy, you know, clipped him, put him down, you know, and then, you know, with Chael, you know, I thought he looked great. You know, he was in there, he's throwing hard. He's kind of going for broke in that first round right away. You know, and I see my openings, and I see where, you know, what I can exploit and whatnot. But I thought it was a good combination of you know, Fedor looking good, and then Chael not looking his best either.
Yeah, Chael actually told us afterwards that he feels like he gave you the blueprint as to how to beat Fedor. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, just those little openings that you see. You know, Chael, you know, he said that. Well, early on, you know, and he doesn't really remember too much as far as, you know, pulling guard a bunch of times. But there's a few times when he went in there, you know, he got his nose answer on the double, you know, took Fedor straight up in the air, slammed down, took him down with kind of a low single, you know. So it was good to see Fedor's kind of balance there, or lack of balance there. But at the same time, you know, he goes and he's really good with his hips and his balance in his hips. And a couple of times Chael went in and Fedor kind of threw his hips over the top and looked really good there. But yeah, there is a blueprint out there. You know, I saw him fatigue a little bit, you know, because that first round was pretty crazy. I wanted to see a second because I thought Chael would actually start taking more control of that fight and potentially win that second and third round. We didn't get to see that, obviously, but I did see those holes.
Chael has been accused afterwards of throwing the fight because of that sequence where at least was on top of Fedor's back and then tried to go for that roll, and that's what, you know, led to his demise. What did you make of that sequence?
Yeah, no, that roll is something that we do in wrestling too. It's one of those things where you get around the neck and you're under the arm also, and you flip over onto your feet, and if the guy continues to lay on his stomach, he kind of chokes him, and so they usually, you know, flip over also with you, and you kind of have their back a little bit, and you get near fall points in wrestling. I know what he was trying to do, but the execution was just flawed because he kind of, I think he abandoned it immediately when, you know, he needed to commit to that. So he kind of flipped over, and knowing that he was slippery at the time, he wasn't going to get it, and so he flipped over and then immediately got, you know, got his belt or whatnot. But that, yeah, there's no fixed fight there. You know, they were throwing at each other. Fedor hit him hard. Chael kind of panicked a little bit. You know, he was kind of out of it. He was surviving a little bit, starting to come back. And then, you know, with that is actually, you know, a move I've seen, you know, using wrestling and all that kind of stuff. So
Bellator has also started this welterweight Grand Prix, and they announced at the beginning of it that the winner is going to get $1 million, courtesy, I think, of 50 Cent and his champagne company and whatnot. You guys aren't getting $1 million, right? The winner isn't getting $1 million, just a belt, correct?
No. It was, you know, it was a surprise to me to see that. You know, so we're talking to Bellator right now. We're gonna make it right and you know, come into this tournament happy for sure. So But yeah, when I saw that, I was like, what about the big guys over here, you know?
Yeah. So you have actually voiced this to Bellator. You have brought this up to them.
Yes, yes. You know, we have them among our eyes, and so we're working through it right now.
Wow.
You know, and I don't know what, if there was a plan, you know, or anything as far as a surprise, purse or gift or, you know, whatever money at the end. But, you know, for me, I've been in this game a long time where, you know, I want to know what I'm getting. And so we're talking to him right now. This is going to be the biggest fight they've ever had, heavyweight championship, let alone, you know, have the potential to win that belt in two divisions here. So, we're going through that process right now.
Did you, I know you had a really good contract with them. Was there anything in there that if you want a second belt that you get some sort of bonus or anything like that?
We kind of did a little negotiating when we entered this tournament. You know, we were asked, coming to this tournament, we didn't know one person that was going to be, one fighter that was going to be in it. So we said yes before any of that, and then negotiated a little bit, amended it for this tournament specifically. So, I'm having a great time in Bellator, though, I want to be here. So, I want to sign a new deal. I want to do the whole thing. I want to go out there, win two belts, defend them both if I can, and keep rolling.
I know I've talked to you about this before, so I don't want to harp on it, but just, like the Cormier thing and all that. I'm just wondering, as a human being, because you never got that title shot, are you the kind of person that uses that as motivation, or do you feel like you're over the UFC experience at this point?
Yeah, I'm kind of over it. Yeah, as a competitor, I want to fight and beat the best, so I've always thought I could beat Cormier. I always wanted to fight him, and close flops or that or whatever. But if you don't think you can beat the best guys in the world, if you don't think you are the best guy in the world, you shouldn't be in this sport. You don't have the right mind frame, So I hear people all the time, oh, you're crazy, you think you beat Cormier. Yeah, of course I think I can beat Cormier. I would have been here if I didn't think that. I'm a competitor. I wanted to fight him. I was trying to get that fight forever, and I still do. I think that time has passed for sure. With him retiring, him getting his couple fights that he wants, and it is what it is. I'm not one to look back. I've made the best of the opportunities here, and now I'm fighting the best of all time.
And finally, you said that you haven't been punched once in this tournament. Is that now something that you're going to try to say, all right, tournament done, I won the belt, and I didn't get a single punch landed on me? Is this a thing that you're going to try to actually, turn into a reality after the three fights? You can go through Fedor as well without getting punched?
Well, that would be nice, being in this sport and having that longevity. I feel the best I've ever felt. Mentally, though, is where I've really made up those – that leaps and bounds I've grown tremendously, mentally. So, not get hit, not take any damage would be great. I enjoyed it this fall because it is a tournament style format. I fought in May, fought in October. Now we kind of have a somewhat quick turnaround, and I'm just lucky that I'm healthy, no injuries. And I get to turn around and put everything into camp to go and compete in the finals. So that being said, I'm not going to go in there and fight a certain way to where I'm worried about not getting hit. I'm going to go in there and part of beating Fedor is making him work, making him get tired, different positions. And, you're going to go through hell to go in there and get a takedown or go in there and throw your own combo. One's coming right back at you.
Congrats on your success, Ryan. Very cool to see. Very happy for you. Good luck on January 26th. Looking forward to it. Thanks for doing this.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. There he is, Ryan Bader, one half of the final on January 26th, Inglewood, California, the Forum, heavyweight title on the line, him versus Fedor Emelianenko. Okay. Also recently announced, UFC's final show on Fox, December 15th in Milwaukee. They started this whole thing with the heavyweight title, Cain Velasquez versus JDS. They end it with a bigger fight, in my opinion. Kevin Lee versus Ally Quinta 2 in Milwaukee. Let's talk to Al right now via the magic of Skype. There he is. Al, how are you?
I'm good, man. I can't see you, but you can see me, I guess.
Yes, yes, yes. How do we sound? All right. Are we okay?
You sound pretty good. How okay. do I sound?
You sound fantastic. You're in your familiar Thanks. Spot. It feels kind of like the old days, dare I say.
Just like the old days. Nothing changes, Ariel. Nothing changes. We just keep getting a little better and a little better. That's it.
That's right.
Back on Skype.
Well, it's great to hear from you. It's great to see you, Al. You got the fight against Kevin Lee. You're the final main event on Fox. First things first, are you happy with this? You beat Kevin Lee 4 years ago. Is this a fight that – I know you guys go back and forth. You love to text me while he's on the show. But is this a fight that gets your juices flowing?
Absolutely. It's a great fight. It was a great fight the first time. Actually, you know what? I'm hearing a little echo right now.
I know. Can we fight through it or what?
I can fight through anything.
Well, if it gets annoying, we could abort it.
All right, we'll see.
Okay. If it's annoying, just tell me.
It's a good fight. You know, he's been on a tear since I fought him. You know, he's had a few stumbles here and there, but for the most part, he's really been looking good lately. He's ranked number 5. He's right there. I think everyone thinks he's right on the cusp of getting a title shot or whatever. He's up there with everybody. So, yeah, I think it's a good fight. And I don't know. Like you said, we've been going back and forth. I think there's a little clash of personalities there. So it makes for an intriguing fight. And it's pretty crazy. I beat him, you know, unanimous decision a couple years later now. I think I'm probably the underdog going into this fight. A lot of people think, you know, he's going to have a good night against me. But I definitely think otherwise.
Is that a legit, like, is that according to the odds makers? Are the lines out yet? Or is that just the sense that you're getting?
Oh, I think that's just – it's. I don't know. I wonder what the odds are. But I think – I just feel like, you know, I feel like that's how it would be, you know.
Well, that's crazy. That has to annoy you.
No, not really. I enjoy – I don't think I've ever – the only fight I've ever lost being the underdog is probably the last fight, you know, a short notice kind of thing. But, nah, the odds – I never even really look at them. So I think – it's a great fight for me. I think he's on his high horse right now, just like he was coming into the UFC. I remember at the weigh-ins of the UFC, he said to Dana White, "You better get your checkbook ready. You know, I'm coming here and like run through everything." And it definitely humbled him. He realized he wasn't as good as he thought he was. He realized that he had to move to Vegas, and you know, he's. I basically changed the guy's life by beating him. He moved to Las Vegas, got a whole new training camp. And that's how I know he's serious, and he's, you know, he's definitely the real deal. He's the real deal coming into this fight. He'll do anything he can do to win. He's all in on this fight game. He's tough. He's big. He's strong. He's, you know, he's athletic, but, I don't think anyone's seen what I can do in a really long time. They haven't seen me really at my best being prepared like I will be for this fight.
It seems also like he kind of annoys you, like just like when he speaks, his presence, his whole demeanor just kind of gets on your nerves. Is that accurate?
Yeah, definitely. He definitely does. He's got a degree in biology. You know that, right? He's got a degree in biology, the guy.
Really?
Yeah, he's got a degree in biology, and he talks like he's like a 19-year-old, one of those mumble rapper guys. With the words. The language, you're a smart guy, man. Like, be yourself. I don't know. He's got, like, this manager who, I think, dresses him in leopard boxers. I saw him in Milwaukee. He was wearing leopard boxers. I mean, what do you do? What do you, represent? I don't know. I just feel like I think he's, like, a better, he should be himself. I think he's, like, a little conflicted and he's battling something. But that, you know, that's, he definitely knows how to fight. So I respect the guy as a fighter. But I think he's just, I don't know. He's a little weird.
What do you think of him wearing a bulletproof vest at 229?
What was he wearing a bulletproof vest for?
I don't know.
Why was he doing that? He said it's because all the fans in Moscow love him. He's the number two popular guy in Moscow behind Khabib. And I mean, Russia. He's the number two guy. Number two most popular guy in Russia besides Khabib, yet he's wearing a bulletproof vest. I don't know. I think I'm probably – I think the Russian people respect me way more than Kevin Lee, you know?
Yeah, and they love to call you Yakuinta. You notice that?
That's, I think that's actually, if you go back to, like where my ancestors came from back in Italy, I think that's how you, the correct way to pronounce it, actually.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, so it's
some Americanized and Iaquinta is how they say it now, but I think way back when it was pronounced Iaquinta.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then that makes sense.
Yeah. When someone from Italy is like someone that lives in Italy says my name, that's how they say it. So I think that's probably like the real right way to say it, but nowadays it's a little different.
So I know you were in Milwaukee last week doing media. Kevin was there too. Did you guys actually cross paths? Did you see each other? Did you talk to each other?
No, we didn't. I heard that he was asking to go on into, he wanted to do interviews with me. But we had a separate schedule. But I know that he did ask if we could do the interviews together. I don't know why he would want to do that. But yeah, no, we didn't see each other.
Man, you were looking good in that suit. Wow. Was that tailored suit? Was that a custom made for Al? I mean, that was nice.
It was. It was a custom made suit from Bespoke Ken in Staten Island.
Wow.
Great friends with Dr. Piazza, who's the sports science lab, runs the sports science lab over there. They hooked me up with a suit. And the UFC helped me out pay for it. They got me looking good. They wanted me to look good in Milwaukee, so they hooked me up.
Wow. Is this a sign of a new relationship? You got, I mean, the UFC hooking you up with clothes? Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it? who knows? You know, they definitely are showing me that they want me to do, you know, they want to push me a little bit. So I think they're, I asked them, I said, listen, I'm going out to Milwaukee. I'm fulfilling my contractual obligations and promoting this fight, but I want to look good doing it. And I want to get a new suit, so I just went and got a new suit. They sent them the invoice, and it's been paid for. It's beautiful.
Well done.
Yeah.
Well done. Wow. Okay. So maybe this is a sign of things to come. By the way, speaking of that fight against Khabib, the last time we saw you, did you take any solace in the fact that, you know, on a day's notice, you went the distance with him, you had your moments, and that Conor was finished full training camp? Like, was there any silver linings while you were watching that?
I mean, I don't know if I thought Conor fought really well. I thought he fought a great fight up until like the end of the third round. I think that's the difference. The end of the third round, they pulled up the audio and he was like, what did he say? Oh, it's just business. Oh, it was just business. Like all the shit he talked, all the nonsense is just business. Kind of like, take it easy on me. I got, you know, you be basically like, I'm checked out. It sounded like he wanted out, you know, it sounded like he was waving the white flag. All the talk and all the nonsense kind of went out the window. And at the end of the third round of my fight, I couldn't even help myself. We got up, we were in like the same position and I pushed him. Just like, get the fuck out of my way. You know, I was almost like, oh shit, I, you know, kind of unsportsmanlike, but whatever. That's just my attitude is like, there's no giving up. There's no, especially after talking all that shit. Like, I don't know. You just got to go out on your shield. You got to defend that choke. I think I defended the choke. But he did a lot of great. He looked strong. He got up a lot on the mat. It's just like, where was all the talk? You know, where was all the talk of our fight could still be going on right now? You know, we could still be fighting. There was no one finished anybody. It was still, you know, I think, now I'm not saying I deserve an immediate rematch by any means, but if anyone deserves a rematch against Khabib, it's not Conor. You know, where was all the McGregor clan that came and took people's villages and stuff like that? I don't know. That war was lost. We're still fighting the war, me. So if anyone, you know, it could be at least, you know. So if anyone gets a rematch, that definitely should not be Conor after that performance. You had more than enough time to prepare for that. You knew what he was doing going in. And, you know, kind of tapped a little quick, you know.
So when you heard the it's just business, you lost a little respect?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it just kind of, it says a lot about everything. It's just, I don't know. It's a, it just describes, that's like him. I think that's him. It's like, you look flashy, you look great, but when the going gets tough, when you're getting a little tired, when you're not, things aren't going your way, you kind of check out.
He referred to you a couple of times in the build-up, you know, oh, the real estate guy and all this stuff. Did you feel insulted by any of his comments?
I guess it was just all business, right? I don't know. he got his, man. I don't know. He pulled the wool over everyone's eyes with all that talk, but he built up a great fight and then he shit the bed. So he fought great. He fought good. He definitely has a lot of skills. It's just the rematch is not anything that he can fix. You can train to defend a takedown. You can defend to get up. You can train to do a million things. The one thing you can't train is to like have heart when shit gets real tough. And when you feel like you're about to die, to figure out a way to live and not have the ref pull you off and, you know, save you. So you can't, that's not going to get fixed by, you know, if they fight again in 6 months, if they fight again in a year, if they fight again in 3 years, that's still going to be there. That's not changing. His teammates aren't helping him in there. All that money is not going to buy heart. So he can say what he wants. I sell real estate. I do this. I suck. I'm number 11. But at the end of the day, he's definitely not tougher than me. So
what do you think? Khabib Ferguson next? And then, I mean, you, Lee, you guys are in that discussion. You know, a win over Lee, I feel like it kind of puts you in there, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think Kevin Lee has been calling for the title shot for a while. I think he's right there. And this is a great fight for me. I think style-wise, it's a great matchup for me. I have a win. Not saying it was a long time ago, and we've both come a long way since then, but I think it'll be a lot of the same fight. You know, I think he shoots a lot of the same takedowns that he did back then. He's a little stronger. He's a little more seasoned, definitely in the stand-up. But I defended all his takedowns except for one. He timed a great takedown in that second round. But I think that it's a very similar fight. Just two guys that are way more experienced. I think I'm like in my – I'm the best I've ever been. I'll peak perfectly for this fight. Over the last like 3 years, there's been a bunch of nonsense, a bunch of drama, but I finally got everything straightened out and I feel strong. I feel fast. I'm in the gym sparring with guys that are just as good, if not better. So it's going to be a good fight. I'm looking forward to a good night.
Man, this is exciting. It feels like you're in a good place. And I remember I scored a couple of those rounds 10-8 in favor of you. I thought you dominated him thoroughly.
You did. Have an interview with Matt Serra after, which has seemed to vanish from the interwebs.
Yeah, don't believe Matt if he's the one who told you that.
I remember. This is etched into my brain.
That I scored it a draw, you're claiming?
You scored it a draw. Said, excuse me, Matt. Well, how did you score the fight? And he looked at you and he was like, are you a
No.
Yes.
He would never do that.
And you were like, you kind of laughed. And he goes, he knocked him down in the first round. He almost tapped him out with a heel hook. He grabbed my glove. And then he took me down and he held on. He almost choked me. All right, a little bit, but it happened. And then the third round I won. So if you're going to give him a 10-8 in the second, you give me a 10-8 in the first. And then the third round is me. I won the fight.
Easy.
No, it was not easy. I mean, I was exhausted and, a little beat up after the fight, but that's to be expected. It wasn't like I breezed through it or anything. He's a tough kid and he's going to be a tough kid this time too. But, I'm looking forward to the challenge. I'm looking forward to it. I think he's right up there with Khabib. I think it's just it could be just as tough of a fight, you know, if not maybe even tougher. But this time I got my head on right. I'm not coming into this. I mean, that weekend was a crazy weekend with Khabib, you know. So I think that this fight is good. This is perfect for me. It's going to be good.
And how about after everything that's happened with the UFC, not only are they buying you suits, you have the distinction of being the final main event on Fox. That's a big deal.
It is an honor. It's great. It's a big thing to be just to be fighting on Fox in a main event.
Yeah.
Is like a dream come true, you know? And then this is going to be the last one ever before they go over to ESPN. Really excited. I'm excited for that too. They came out a pretty sick poster. Did you see the poster?
Yes. Yeah. Fight? Not bad. Not bad.
I know. Not bad. It's pretty good, I think.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
I think it's one of the better ones they've come out in a while. So I definitely got to get a win in this one so I can hang that one up and be proud of it.
Well, I like this. I feel like we've turned the corner here. You're in a good place. You're healthy. You're looking forward to the fight. Rematch, you and Kevin Lee finally get to settle your differences once and for all. This is good. This is promising. I feel good about it all. And we get to see you on Skype. You didn't get to see me, but the tan is looking good. The guns are looking good. I mean, it's all coming together here. This is great. I like Quinta. You got to love him. There is only one Raging Al. There he is. Via the magic of Skype. How about it? All right. Thank you very much to him. December 15th, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That is the final main event on Fox. All right. Last week, also, UFC officially announcing that at UFC 232, there will be another featherweight female fight on the card, and it will involve Kat Zingano versus Megan Anderson. And this is notable because they've never had two female featherweight fights on the same card. They've also started to really get behind this trend of having a standby fight, a backup fight, if you will. If something happens in the main event or in a title fight, in this case, it's going to be the co-main event, and this would be that fight. Big fight for Megan Anderson, the former Invicta featherweight champion, had her debut in June against Holly Holm, lost that fight, now looking to rebound against the former bantamweight title contender, Kat Zingano. Megan Anderson joins us right now on the phone. Megan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Ariel?
I'm doing very well. So this is a second chance for you to get back on the horse to get that first UFC win. You took some time off between, you know, by the time this fight happens and the Holly Holm fight. Any particular reason for that? 6 months in between fights?
Was not by choice.
Okay.
You know, I did. It was a long time before I was able to, you know, have the Holly Holm fight. So we really wanted to be fighting a lot more regularly, but the issue was, you know, the UFC weren't able to find a suitable opponent for us. You know, we were just like, give us anyone. We were looking at some of the tough girls, like instead of putting me against them on the tough finale, you know, making it in Adelaide, because, you know, I think Adelaide would have been perfect. I'm Australian. I haven't fought an Australian in 4 years. It would have been great, but, you know, they didn't want to do that. So it was just kind of like a waiting game until this kind of happened.
And are you surprised that the opponent ended up being Kat, someone who hasn't fought at 145, you know, coming off a solid win on 135? Did this catch you by surprise?
Yeah, a little bit. Really what it was is, like, we've seen she tweeted about wanting to be the alternate for the Chris Nunez fight, and I screenshotted it and sent it to my manager, Tim, and was just like, is she wanting to fight at 145? And he sent it to Mick, and Mick was like, yeah, I like it. I'm going to offer it to her. And a few days later, she come back, and it was a go. So I was like, if she wants to fight at 145, like, I need someone. Like, we're looking for a suitable opponent. You know, could this be that person?
She's been around the sport for a while, fought for the belt against Ronda Rousey. Is this, I mean, Holly Holm, Kat Zingano's, you're not taking it easy, or they're not taking it easy on you in terms of names. Is this someone that you've been watching for a while?
Like, I obviously, like, you know, being a female fighter, I pay attention to, you know, the female fights and stuff like that. It definitely wasn't someone that I looked at fighting, but I definitely am excited for the opportunity.
What did you learn, if anything, from your debut against Holly Holm? What are the lessons you took away from that?
I think there's a lot of lessons, and you know, we're back to the drawing board in the gym. We're working on everything, and you know, we're excited because, you know, from Megan, from my fight in Invicta to my fight against Holly was significantly different. And, you know, even in the last few months, like, I'm a different fighter again. So, you know, having the ability to be more active, like, it's really given us a great opportunity to see, you know, where we need to improve, what's going well, all that kind of stuff. So we're in the gym training hard, and, you know, the Megan from 6 months ago is not going to be the same fighter.
Did the UFC jitters, fighting for the first time in the octagon, fighting someone like Holly, did any of that get to you?
No, not really. The only thing I was, like, really concerned about was, like, I don't think the Invicta cage is as big as the UFC cage that we fought in. I was like, oh, maybe, like, is it going to feel huge? And it didn't. I was like, it just felt like a normal cage, and it was fine, and that's about it. Like, I was, admittedly, like, it wasn't the result that we wanted, but you have to, you know, you have to take your losses to, for me, every time I've lost, I've had a lot of growth from that. So, you know, this is only going to make me better.
What about the layoff? Did that affect you?
No, not really. And, like, these are all, like, legitimate concerns. Like, I thought about this. I thought about, oh, am I going to have, you know, am I going to have, you know, promotional jitters? Am I going to, you know, I've been away for a really long time, but, like, it just really wasn't. Like, I was just ready to fight. Like, I was excited to be there. I was happy to be there to finally get my opportunity. But none of that really came into effect.
Have they told you that you guys are the quote-unquote backup fight for the co-main event? Like, if something happens to Cyborg or Nunes, that one of you would slide in there? And if so, how do they decide who will be that person to slide in?
I have no idea. To be honest, I haven't really... I think that might be the case, but I haven't been told, like, definite. And who, if it were the case, who it would be. To be honest, I'm just glad to have a fight. I'm focusing on Kat, and if worst case scenario something happens, you know, I'm going to step up for that opportunity if they want me to, for sure, and be ready if that's the case.
You have said in the past that, you know, you were frustrated that the UFC wasn't investing in the featherweights. The fact that they have an Ultimate Fighter show where half the cast are featherweights, the fact that, you know, Cyborg is still around, at least for now, Nunes is going up to 145, that you guys are fighting at 145 on the same card. Do you feel like they're getting behind it a little more?
I really think what happens after the tough finale is definitely going to be a big determining factor on whether they are 100% committed to the division. Like, are they going to sign these women to 145, or what are they going to do? I think it really depends on what's going to happen there.
Okay. Have you been watching?
No, I don't have cable.
What?
So, yeah.
Why not? You're one of those cord cutters?
No, I don't really watch much TV. I play Xbox.
Really?
In my spare time, yeah.
You're one of those? Are you a Fortnite player?
No, I kind of, like, I haven't played Fortnite yet, purely for the fact that, like, everybody's playing Fortnite, so I don't want to be like everybody.
Yeah.
So I'm spamming Assassin's Creed Odyssey at the moment, so it just came out, like, a few weeks ago, so I've been putting some time in there.
So that's it? Like, no TV shows, no nothing, no Netflix, nothing like that?
Yeah, I have a Fire Stick, and I can watch stuff on there, so.
Okay. So a little bit of that, but as far as watching other stuff, no, none of that. No Fortnite, okay. I'm a big Fortnite guy. I just interviewed Ninja. I don't know if you're familiar
with
him. Do you know Ninja?
No,
jeez, I don't. Jeez Louise, we have nothing in common. Wow.
I know. I've been watching that new Mayans TV show, like the spinoff of Sons of Anarchy. That's been pretty good.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one.
You should watch it. Unless you've watched kind of Sons of Anarchy, there's a bit of like a backstory of like the club that... I like it.
Okay, I'll look into it. Where is that? Where do you watch that?
You can watch it. It's on like FX.
Oh, okay, okay. Yes, Sons of Anarchy. That's it. That is on FX. That's right. All right, I will check into that. This, by the way, this will be your first time in Vegas, right? Fighting in Vegas. Am I wrong?
Yes. No. This will be my first time in
Vegas.
Wow,
that's exciting. A bit of a bucket list thing, right?
No, not really. Fighting in Vegas isn't really like, it's just a place. Like, I fought in California, I fought in Chicago. Like, it's, for me, like, it's, I don't really have a bucket list of places to fight at. It's more of like I just want to fight wherever. Like, it's not,
it's the
really
fight capital of the world. It's a big deal. No, John Jones fighting on it. This is not some rinky dink card. This is a big deal.
Yeah, I am actually really, really excited for the Jonas Gustafsson fight. I personally thought Gustafsson won the first fight, so I'm really... Gustafsson is one of my biggest... Like, as a fan, he is, like, one of my favorites to watch. And as a fighter, he is one of my favorites to watch as well. He is so good at what he does, and I feel like he's just come short. So I'm really excited to watch the rematch, and I really hope he gets the title.
Wow, okay, you're rooting for him. Interesting.
Yeah.
He's somewhat of a polarizing figure in our sport, but you're a fan.
Yeah. I'm a fan of Gustafsson.
Okay, interesting. Oh, you're a fan of Gustafsson. Excuse me, I misunderstood. You're pulling for Gus, not Jones.
Yeah.
Oh,
Gus, no, I'm not.
Gus is not a polarizing figure.
Don't get me wrong. Like, John Jones is great, but I am more of a Gustafsson fan overall.
I think you just like the tall fighters.
Maybe the tall strikers.
Yes. But I'm curious, why don't they have you fight in Adelaide? That fight is in the same month, to have you fight back home.
I don't know. They didn't come to us with that date. Like, I wanted to. Like, I really would have loved to fight in Adelaide, but that's... Hopefully, maybe next year, we can, when the UFC go back, hopefully they can go back to Brisbane. That's where I'm from. So I'd love to fight back home if they go back.
Who do you think wins the Nunes-Cyborg fight?
I actually think this is going to be a really competitive fight. Okay. I think Amanda has a lot of power, and I think it's going to transfer well at 145. She was undefeated at 145 before dropping to 135, and she has a lot of knockouts at this weight division. So I am actually really excited to see how the power matches up. I think she is very well-rounded, and she's a lot more aggressive than a lot of Chris's opponents.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just going to be... I think Amanda has a better chance than Chris's previous opponents to beat her.
Does this feel like do or die for you in the UFC, this fight? Does it feel like... I know they're all big. I know they're all must-win, but considering the state of the division and how the first fight went, do you feel like you really, really have to win and look good in this fight?
I feel like that with every one of my fights, so I really don't feel like it's a do or die. To be honest, like, I don't like to think of it in that terms because, like, for me, I'm going to fight regardless. Like, I love to fight and I love fighting. So whether it's in the UFC or if they, you know, end up cutting me, that, you know, it is what it is, but I'm going to fight regardless. And, you know, I'm going to still look at every one of my fights as, like, the biggest fight of my career. So, you know, I think that puts unnecessary pressure on yourself that, you know, we're already getting into a fist fight and having somebody else trying to punch us in the face. Like, we don't need to add extra shit to that.
That is true. That's a good way of looking at it. Well, I'm happy you're back. I'm happy that the UFC is putting two women's featherweight fights on the same card. That seems like progress in its own right. And this is a big-time fight. It's not just some random person that they're plucking out of obscurity. Everyone knows who Katsingano is. She's coming off a nice win. This feels like a big deal.
Yeah, I really feel like this is a great high-profile fight. I think, you know, she's a great athlete. I have a lot of respect for her as an athlete. I have a lot of respect for her as a person. So I'm really excited to showcase, you know, everything we've been working on and to show, you know, kind of, you know, show the doubters that, you know, there is no chink in the armor. There is no weakness in the armor.
I'm looking forward to it. Welcome back, Megan. Best of luck in training, and we'll see you out there in Vegas in December.
Thank you very much. I'll see you guys there.
All right, there she is, Megan Anderson, one of the top contenders at 145. She returns to action on December 29th. UFC 232 against Catanzaro. Before we say hello to Michaela Mayer here in studio, let me tell you about our good friends over at Indochino. Yes, there's that music. Every man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. You know this by now. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. We make suits and shirts for your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from and the option to personalize the details, including your lapel, lining pockets, buttons, and writing your own monogram. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at our showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online over at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. This week, our viewers and listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 USD at Indochino.com when entering MMA at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code MMA for any premium. I think someone's calling. I hear someone.
How are you? This is Ally Quinta. Home Smart
Realty. What's happening? There's an Ally Quinta video playing. Okay. Suit for just $359 and free shipping. Did you guys hear that? It's like Ally Quinta calling someone. Is that me or have I lost my mind? Anyway, incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino are also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater, and they'll be good any time of the year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at the introductory price of $79 USD. Now, thank them and support them because they support us. I am so excited about our next guest. She is a 2016 U.S. Olympic boxer. She is killing it. She just won a belt a couple of weeks ago. She's fighting for Top Rank. She's one of the best female boxers in the world. And she's joining us in studio, Michaela Mayer. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Welcome. Please have a seat right over there. Thank you so much for coming in studio. This is very exciting.
Yeah, I know. I've been wanting to.
Yes, and you changed your plans for us. Now you're very tall. How tall are you?
5'9".
5'9". So if you want to put that microphone close to your mouth, okay. And a little higher up. Yeah, how's that? Is it a little loose?
You tell me.
No, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We're very DIY here. Does that feel too low? Is it annoying?
No, as long as you can hear me, it's fine.
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay. Well, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks.
This is very exciting. What brings you to New York?
I came out here. Everlast partnered with Bloomingdale's. They're doing a event over there for breast cancer awareness. So I went and taught a class at Bloomingdale's to a bunch of really awesome women.
Wow. You taught a class?
Yeah.
At Bloomingdale's?
Yeah.
Really?
It's kind of hard. You got to push the mannequins around. But we did a whole workout. Had pink gloves and everything. So.
Because you're sponsored by Everlast.
Yeah. Everlast is my glove and gear sponsor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how was the turnout?
It was great. It was it wasn't like open to the public. They sold a certain amount of tickets online, but it was a sold out class. So it was great. Yeah, they donated a lot of money to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. So hats off to Bloomingdale's and Everlast for that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for changing your plans to come in studio.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. Congratulations on the belt. Let me see if I get it right because we're sort of noobs when it comes to this stuff. Okay. NABF.
Yes.
Lightweight?
Junior lightweight.
Junior lightweight.
Which is 130.
130?
Yeah.
You won that a couple weeks ago in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
On ESPN.
Nebraska. Yeah.
Omaha,
no,
Nebraska.
Okay.
No.
I am so confused. Yeah, Omaha.
Yeah.
I've been so many places. I don't even know where I can't remember.
We're in New York right now.
We're in New York now.
Yes.
Okay.
There's, I think, some of your action.
Yeah.
There it is.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
This was your first televised fight.
No, the one before that was my first televised fight.
That's right, in August.
Yeah, and this was actually on the app. So I've only had one fight actually on ESPN. But hopefully, you know, I'm trying to impress everybody so that they want to keep me on ESPN. Obviously, that's
yes,
what I want to fight.
You're killing it. 8-0 now. Yeah. You made your debut around a year ago, a little over a year ago now, right?
Yeah, August 25th of last year. So I'm going on my ninth fight in a little over a year, which is awesome.
Do you have your next fight lined up yet?
Yeah, it's already set.
Man, you guys move very fast in boxing.
Well, I mean, I think I'm a special case because this is unheard of for women's boxing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those girls have been pro for 5 years and only have 18, 19 fights, and I'm half that in less than a year.
Right.
So that was one of my requirements. If I was going to turn pro, I needed to sign with a major promoter because I wasn't going to sit on the shelf. I think that's what a lot of women boxers have had to do over the years, and that's the worst thing.
Okay. And why do you think you're the one who's getting fast-tracked and getting all this attention?
Because I signed with a major promoter.
Ah, okay. So Top Rank.
This is the first time in history where women can come to these promoters and say, hey, I'm a multiple-time national champion, world medalist, Olympian, Olympic medalist, because they only let us into the Olympics in 2012, right?
Right.
So I'm Top Rank's first female. Golden Boy just picked up their first couple of females, and so it's finally happening, but it just wasn't a thing before.
So a lot of fans may not know, but you have a few connections to our world of mixed martial arts. And the first time that we spoke, and I hope I'm not revealing anything here, because I think you've talked about it in interviews.
I've said everything, yeah.
You were actually very close to moving over to MMA from being an amateur slash Olympic boxer to now going to MMA. You were not going to go pro into boxing. And I remember talking to you. We were going back and forth. And then all of a sudden I see news that you signed with Top Rank. I was like, what happened?
It happened so fast.
How close were you to actually going into MMA?
I was literally a week or two away from signing a deal.
Wow.
With Bellator. I was going to go in Bellator direction because they were going to allow me to still box or whatever. And they were going to give me time to make the transition and actually train for it. And I mean, when I got out of the Olympics, there was no major boxing promoter offering me signing bonuses and a contract like they were my teammates. My teammates that also didn't medal, but they were men, you know?
Okay,
so I'm not getting that offer because it's just not happening. And I thought, like, do I want to go for another Olympics? Because it's hard. You're traveling the world. You're fighting your ass off constantly, but no one sees you. You're fighting in random cities, Bulgaria, okay?
Yeah.
So I can't reel in a following because no one can see me fight, which means I can't reel in the sponsors. I'm not on TV. And I'm like, where can I go to capitalize on the next 5 years? Because you can't be an athlete forever. And women were getting the respect in MMA. So I was seriously serious. And I was excited about doing it. But the stars kind of all aligned at once. My manager sat down with Top Rank. He's like, let's just make sure we have all our options on the table. And Top Rank's obviously the best promoter in the United States. I mean, they're the best. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, all right, whatever. But in my head, I was already set. I was like, okay, I want to do this MMA thing. Like, I'm ready for this. And I sat down with Top Rank a week later, and a week after that, I was signing a contract with them because they gave me everything that I wanted. They gave me, they were going to give me just what Bellator was going to give me. And so I was like, all right, let me continue my dream of developing a market for women's boxing.
Did they know that you were that close to signing with Bellator?
I told them, yeah. I said, listen, I already have a nice deal on the table, and if this is going to work, this has got to be matched at least because, you know.
I feel like it's one of those things where, like, okay, it's almost like you want what you can have. So then when they found out that you were close to signing with someone else, they're like, wait a second, we need to keep her. We need to keep her in boxing. We need to sign her. I feel like that worked to your advantage.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a couple of things. One, I feel like I had the resume, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so that backed it up. And then I feel like they think that if they're going to move a female in boxing, it's got to be the full package, okay? She can't just be a great fighter. She has to be able to speak. She has to walk the walk, talk talk, everything, because they were, like, taking a risk saying, there's never been a market for women's boxing. Can we do it with Michaela? And I sat down in their office, and I'm like, if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be me.
Was Bellator mad?
No.
They weren't mad. No hard feelings?
I had my manager deal with that.
Okay.
But, you know, I had to do what's best for me. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
And is there any chance that you go back and revisit this idea, or you think you're done with it?
I think I'm done with it because I feel like the boxing thing is working for me.
Uh-huh.
You know, Top Rank is moving me really, really well. And I think there's some really big fights for me on the horizon.
Okay. Since you were like a week away from signing with Bellator, had you decided where you're going to train for MMA?
No. Okay, yeah. Well, I guess I was going to go out to Uriah Faber's gym.
Yeah, which Team Alpha Male.
Which I did for a minute, and then I ended up moving back.
Where's home now?
Colorado Springs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you did for a minute, then
I
you
did
moved
for
back.
A minute. I moved back to Colorado, and I was going to try and do my boxing out there, and I did for a while, but
what happened?
Lots of things happened.
Okay.
moved out there with my boyfriend at the time, who he was transitioning to, so he stayed there, and then I had a coach out there as well, but you know, nothing compares to the training in Colorado.
Okay.
I have sparring partners constantly because you're right there at the Olympic Training Center, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's such an intense training lifestyle that I'm used to, and I didn't have that there. It was a little bit – it just wasn't as tough and wasn't as hard. So I'm used to that structure. So
okay.
I had the altitude
in
Colorado, which is huge, such a huge advantage. Plenty of sparring partners, good coaches.
Right.
So – I just knew I had to go back
there. It was a little too loosey-goosey there?
A little too loose. Not as much structure as I'm used to.
Okay.
Too much of a commute. I didn't have the best strength training, and I think my boxing coaches out here are more experienced, so.
Why'd you choose that gym?
I don't know. I had met Uriah Faber at the Ronda Rousey fight.
Oh, okay.
Because I went there because I was sparring, yep, giving Ronda, yep, some sparring for her last fight, and she'd got me tickets. So I went and I talked to Uri Faber, and I said, you know, I'm looking to transition. And he said, we'd love to have you come out and try it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your boyfriend was a wrestler, right?
Yeah.
Is he doing MMA now?
Yeah, he is.
Oh, he has. Has he actually gone pro?
Yeah, I believe he had his first fight this last week.
Okay. But you guys aren't together?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Is everything okay?
I'm good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I'm perfect.
Okay. Don't date fighters. It's a mistake.
I know. I don't know about dating fighters.
Or any kind. I don't know. I just feel like it's too combustible. Both
it
of
is.
You in the same world.
It is
There's
really
jealousy
hard.
Probably, right? You're competing against each other. Feels like a mess.
I don't even know. I don't even know like the type of person I want to date anymore, because you think that it would be hard to date someone with like a regular 9-to-5 because, right, I don't have that kind of lifestyle.
Sure.
So I'd be like wanting to do things in the middle of the day just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But I don't know about dating a fighter. It's rough. I'm not gonna say.
I have heard from the males in the relationship where there's a male and female, mm-hmm, both fighting, that it's hard sometimes when the female gets more attention because it's such an alpha male thing. Or even, I know there's one case, which I won't explicitly say who it is, but like where the husband is a 9-to-5er and the female is a fighter.
Yeah.
Can't deal with that as well because she's now the alpha in the relationship and getting all the attention.
Yeah.
It's a big problem that you guys have to deal with.
I think so. I think it'll just have to be the right person.
Sure.
You know, they were, right. I'm not going to write them off because they're a fighter. But
no, I understand. But I can see why it would be sort of like,
yeah,
oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we left alpha male.
Yes.
That's when we decided to go into boxing. We've turned our back on MMA. We're never going to do it. Do you even watch MMA now?
Yes, I'm still an MMA fan, but
okay.
I've been watching less and watching more pro boxing. Because,
yes,
even when I was competing for Team USA, I didn't watch a ton of pro boxing. It's just such a different world.
Yeah.
So, you know, trying to learn my world now.
It feels to me, and correct me if you feel otherwise, that there's been some sort of moments where female boxing has had, you know, the shine, mm-hmm, Mia St. John and Leila Ali and whatnot. But this feels,
yeah,
like the most legitimate era in female,
sure,
boxing history, right? This past weekend, Katie Taylor getting a ton of pub on DAZN.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting a ton of attention. Clarissa Shields, who I know you are friends with, right?
Yeah.
Cecilia Brakes. It just feels like in the past you can name one or two and they were sort of like a novelty act.
Yeah.
Why do you think this is happening all of a sudden?
The Olympics.
Okay.
Look at the girls in the past, or even the girls who, you know, not the Leila Ali, not the Mia St. Johns, like, who actually had careers, but the girls were hustling behind the scenes who just weren't getting the
yeah,
recognition. They didn't have the ladder to climb. They didn't have, I mean, they just let women to, allowed them to compete at the world championships. I mean, think of something like 2008 or something, or four. And then Olympics 2012. So, like I said, it's the first time women can come into these pros with these resumes better than most guys.
Right.
And that created that gave them a lot of experience and just kind of built up the level of competition for women's boxing.
Can I give you my theory? I think,
yeah,
your theory is good. I also think MMA helped a little bit.
Okay, it did.
I feel like UFC having shows headlined by females and saying, hey, look, people can come and,
totally,
and check this out, made the boxing guys, the old boxing guys, be like, oh, there's
my promoter said that when
he
we
did.
Sat down. He's
Who,
like,
Todd DeBoeuf?
Yeah, and
okay,
we talked about that. You know, like, look what girls like Ronda Rousey have done. Like, we have been, it's been proven that women can sell fights, women can headline. People want to tune into women combat sports.
Another theory that I have that I'd love to get your take on, because I feel like you have noticed this as well,
mm-hmm,
and I hate to say it, but I just think it's the truth. I think that the attire has actually been unflattering to females, and men are chauvinistic, and the fact that the female boxers are wearing these baggy shorts and these big gloves, as opposed to an MMA. Well, but I've noticed that you don't do that.
Yeah.
Is this a conscious decision on your part?
It was conscious only because I don't like big baggy shorts.
Okay.
I mean, we had to wear them in the amateurs, like our shorts, the USA shorts were like down to here. I mean, I don't even like training in baggy clothes. I train in a sports bra and tight leggings just because that's how I feel
easier,
comfortable.
Right.
Yeah. So that's just my style.
Okay. So no one sat you down or you didn't sit with someone and be like, hey, maybe if I make this a little
this
more
will sell
feminine?
More?
No.
That's just my style.
Okay.
That's just how
but
I like
I feel like
to
it's
be.
Actually working. Because
great.
Women don't work out in big baggy shorts like that.
Yeah.
Women
I mean,
don't relate
do.
To it.
I just don't.
Okay.
I don't like wearing a ton of clothes when I work out.
Okay.
It's rare that I'll wear a shirt even. Just
I was trying to give you credit for actually having the
Thank
foresight
you.
Of changing things because I feel like that's been a problem. Because if you compare it to MMA, what are they wearing?
Yeah, I know.
No one's wearing baggy stuff,
super
right?
Skimpy, yeah.
Right?
I mean, they have to, but.
I don't know if it's skimpy. Do you feel like it's skimpy,
well,
or is
I mean,
it just what's
just
easier when you're grappling and stuff like that?
That's what I'm saying. It's easier when you're grappling, but compared to what we have, I mean, you know.
Sure.
It is short shorts and
right. Why do you think MMA fans have been so much quicker to, you know, UFC will headline a card. We were just talking to someone who's going to be, you know, on a big fight, John Jones. They'll headline, you know, cards with females, and MMA fans who are supposed to be like these, you know, sort of jocks, dumb alpha male type mm-hmm. of people, they don't bat an eye. They have no problem with females headlining cards. But in boxing, it's been this thing where HBO never headlined and this and that. Why do you think it took so long for the boxing community to accept female fighters?
Honestly, there was a lot of female fighters, but not all of them were ESPN worthy. Not all of them were worthy of getting signed by these major promoters. They didn't. There wasn't the talent level wasn't always there. Hmm. And people want to argue that, like, oh, we haven't gotten the attention, but not everyone deserves that spotlight. The talent level, the talent pool is a lot deeper now. I mean, these girls that are coming into the pros have actual skill. And that's why I say that the Olympics was such a huge contribution to that, is because these girls are coming in the pros who have over 150 amateur fights. I have almost 150 amateur fights.
Wow.
The girls that were pro back in the day didn't have that. So that's where the experience is coming in. You know, that's why I can go up against girls who are 20 and 0 now and still look way more crisper and skilled than them, is because I have so much talent, background and experience in the amateurs.
Do you cringe when you watch MMA fighters box? Like, how, you know, female fighters, because it's not very technical at times, right? It can get a little ugly.
Yeah, so, but I've my mindset has changed a little bit, because at first I'd be like, just step in with the 1-2, but the spacing in MMA is so much different than it is in boxing. You can step into your punches in boxing. I mean, in MMA, you can get kicked in the head or taken down, like, you just don't know what's coming at you, so it is very different.
Okay, because I feel like for the longest time, boxers were criticizing MMA fighters for the way they box, but I'm actually hearing more of this, where there's an appreciation for the weapons that they have to worry about.
Yeah.
Now. You can't just worry about this, right? You have to...
so much. And training a little bit for MMA, I realized that. I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Have you ever done any ground stuff?
A little bit.
Or just when you were dabbling?
Just when I was dabbling, okay. I did a little bit, but... And honestly, like, I wasn't, like, super fond of it.
Okay.
I was just like, this is hard.
Yes.
Because they'd go over, like literally 8 moves, and then, okay, that's 1 move.
Yeah.
Like, 8 moves is 1 move. Put your ankle here. I'm like, what the? How am I supposed to remember this shit? Can I cuss on here?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Go nuts. But I'm assuming someone with 100 fights, 150 fights, it's hard to reprogram your brain as well, right?
Yeah,
to worry about that stuff in a fight. You have enough to worry about just in boxing alone.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I'm really glad that I didn't try and do MMA and boxing at the same time. Because it definitely would have changed my boxing, and I don't think I would have been as successful. So,
your first foray into this world of combat sports was actually Muay Thai.
Yeah.
16, 17 years old?
Yeah.
You were sort of a problem child, is it fair to say?
I mean, I definitely needed to be in the gym.
Okay.
I think that really kind of gave me a direction.
Partying and not paying attention to school.
I did whatever I wanted. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't have to go to school. My dad got, I was just telling this some earlier, but my dad got custody of us at a really young age, and he had a full-time job, you know, 3 daughters and a full-time job. So I had to get myself up and go to school. He was gone before I left, and then home when it was already dark. So what I did during the day, was up to me. So I just sometimes just wouldn't get up and go to school and just got caught up in partying with my friends and wanting to be a teenager.
And you had 2 sisters?
2 sisters.
Older or younger?
1 older, 1 younger.
Okay. And did they follow you as well? Like, when you went to go check out the Muay Thai school down the block, did they do the same?
No, because my little sister was like 9 years old.
Ah, okay.
My older sister was a year older. She had a little more structure. You know, she was like going to college and doing well and whatever. Just, I think we all just kind of responded to our lifestyle a little bit differently.
Okay.
And I'm the one who gave my dad hell.
What happened with your parents?
My mom, well, they divorced at a young age, and then my mom's always struggled with alcohol and substance abuse. So when I was 12, 13, my dad got custody of all of us. And I mean, he did a great job. He did the best he could, you know. He was so supportive of my boxing too. I remember coming home one day, I'm like, Dad, I signed myself up at a Muay Thai gym. I'm going to start fighting. He's like, okay, cool. He was probably like, hell yeah, let's do something productive, because there were weeks where I just wouldn't come home for a week or two at a time.
Really?
And so he started to get, you know, he's worried about me. So when I said I was going to start boxing, he saw everything kind of change.
Where did you go for like a week or two?
My boyfriend's house at the time.
Wow. And you wouldn't check in?
I wouldn't check
in. Man, you're the worst
child
ever.
I was just, I was so, I really like messed up my dad after a while.
Poor guy.
I know.
Probably
sorry,
has enough
dad.
Three daughters, single dad, and you're just bouncing for a week or two?
Yeah.
How's your relationship with him now?
Awesome. I mean, great.
Okay.
He's like my number one supporter. I mean, how many dads, when their daughter came home at 17, and said, "Dad," or 18, when they announced the Olympics, I'm like, "Dad, I'm gonna start training for the Olympics. It's in 2 years. I need to start going to these national tournaments." And he was on board. He's like, "All right, let's do it."
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So why did you switch from Muay Thai to boxing?
A couple of reasons. One, I was just gonna take some fights to develop my hands more. That was my coach's idea because I had like a kink in my back and I didn't want to kick.
Okay.
And for a while, and so he wanted me to take some boxing fights, and I literally never went back to Muay Thai.
Really?
After my first boxing fight,
you just liked that. You sensed a difference.
Yeah, I think there. I wanted to be. I knew right away I wanted to be the best female fighter in the world.
Okay.
I mean, even I sucked ass. Right. I just walked into the gym and I was like, no, this is what I want to do. I knew right away, and so when I started boxing, I just realized there's more of a ladder to climb in boxing in the United States versus Muay Thai. And, you know, shortly after they announced the Olympics. And, yeah.
Were you a fight fan as a kid? Like, did you watch?
No. No one in my family boxed. No one in, I didn't know anything about the sport.
Wow.
It was just because there was a gym by my house that I walked by every day. And
did you start to sense that you became a better person? Like, you started to pay attention more? You were better to your dad once you got this routine in your life?
Totally. I mean, I buckled down in school, and I was just, I'd wake up. I ended up in that small school attached to the big school.
Because
I was so like behind in credits and everything. But what was cool about that, it actually worked out because I got out of school at 12. As long as I did like all my work, I got out of school at 12. So I'd go to school till 12, and then I'd go to work till 4:30. I worked at a salon across from my house. And then from there, I'd run back to my house, grab my running shoes, and run to the gym.
Wow.
And I did that for like 3 years.
Every day?
Every day.
And when did it go from just doing that to have structure to actually trying to make this into your life, into your living?
Well, like I said, I knew right away, but I also knew right away that if I was going to have a career in the sport, I had to start branding myself. I had to get sponsors. I had to get endorsement deals. This is before I even had Instagram, right? So it was like this mindset that I had. And I ended up I came to my dad one day when I was like 19 and I was like, "Dad, I just come off a loss. I'm like, I don't know. I'm boxing now," but I was still with the Muay Thai coach. I'm like, "I just don't think that my training is where it needs to be." And I was bummed out. And so he said, "Well, there's this program I found on the USA Boxing website where it's in Michigan and you can go to school on scholarship and train with a 2-time Olympic coach." It was like an Olympic training site attached to the school. The only boxing scholarship offered in the United States. Wow. I'm like, "Hey, yeah, whatever, look into it." I'm like bummed out, right? He calls me a week later or something. He was trying to get a hold of this guy, Coach Al, my coach now, and say, "You know, they're letting women to the Olympics now. You have to take my daughter. Take my daughter. She wants to come to your program." And 2 weeks later, I was on a plane from LA to Northern Michigan with a suitcase and like the day before school started. So I enrolled myself in college and I started training with Olympic coach Al Mitchell.
And you went alone?
I went alone, yeah.
And that was
9 years ago.
And he didn't want to coach you, right? Like,
he's
coached the likes of Tyson in the past and legends, and he wanted nothing to do with females.
Yeah, I mean, he was a 96 Olympic coach. So he worked with Floyd Mayweather and, I mean, Andre Ward, everyone. So he had never trained a girl, and he was like, "Well, I guess if we're in the Olympics now, sure, come in." But I definitely surpassed his expectation. I was like a diamond in the rough. I knew I was going to be great. I knew I was going to make that Olympic team, but I don't think he really expected me to go as far as I did.
Did you get the sense early on that he was kind of doing it like he was trying to break you and that you would leave and be out of his hair and then you sort of won him over time?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he wanted me out of his hair, but I just don't think there was like a bunch of other guys in the team too. I was the only girl that were really good and probably more likely to make the Olympic team than I were. So, he trained me and everything, but I don't think he even says, he's like, "It wasn't until you made it to the finals of Olympic trials in 2012 that I knew you were going to be great."
Okay.
And that was only 2.5 years after I met him.
Wow.
So we'd only been training together for 2 years. Yeah.
You didn't make the 2012 team.
I didn't, no.
How difficult was that?
It wasn't difficult at all because I came really close, so yeah, I was bummed out. But if you think about it, I was 22. I had just started boxing at 18. I took my first boxing fight at 18, so I hadn't been doing it that long. And I made it to the finals, lost by 2 points. So I proved to myself that I have what it takes, and I immediately knew that, okay, I'm going to train for 4 more years, and I'm going to make 2016 Olympic team.
But mentally, there's not a moment there where you're like, "Oh, I got to climb that ladder all over again. It's exhausting."
No. Nope.
That's how I would feel.
I just had so much. I feel like I had so much more to learn.
Okay.
I said, if I can do this after 3.5, 4 years of training, imagine what I can do in 4 more years.
Right.
And I loved it. So it wasn't a problem to me.
What are your feelings towards the U.S. Olympic team? I know Rhonda has been very vocal. She's not a fan. Looking back, how do you feel about it? The experience, how they treat you, what they do with you afterwards?
Looking back, I would never go for another Olympics.
Okay.
It's like a monopoly. Okay. It's like, it's almost like a scam. There's a rule, there's something called Rule 40 in the Olympics. Do you know what that is?
No.
So basically, first of all, people training for the Olympics don't get paid a lot of money, especially when you're not in sports like gymnastics, swimming, track and field, right? When you're like in sports like boxing or.
What do you get, like 12,000 or something?
For a year? Oh yeah. It's like standard is like, if you're on the national team number one, it's like $1,000 a month.
Jeez.
I was getting a little more because I had made the Olympic team and I was whatever, but still at the end of the day, it's not enough. Like you're not making that much money.
Right.
So what you got to do is you got to go out and you reel in as many sponsors as you can. Okay, maybe you reeled in a sponsor, they're going to pay you $300 a month. Okay, they're going to pay you $500 a month. They're going to pay you $1,000. So now you're accumulating these sponsors. And then you get to the Olympics. And unless you're Nike, Coca-Cola, McDonald's, I had Under Armour. That was my one big sponsor.
Okay.
So they had to pay a big fee to get to be able to post or whatever about it. But anyone else, I couldn't talk about my sponsors. They couldn't talk about me. There's a huge blackout period called Rule 40. And so I had a couple of sponsors, and I get there, and they're like, you can't talk about your sponsors. Sponsors can't talk about you. And I have to tell my sponsors who have been paying me every month for the last year that don't talk about me during the Olympics. And so where's the incentive?
Yeah.
There's no incentive to invest in an Olympic athlete. So.
And why is that? Why do they even have that rule? What's the point?
So the Olympic Committee can get money off major sponsors.
Okay.
Like, you know, like they get a lot of money off McDonald's and Nike and Coca-Cola and all that. So it's just a struggle. And then, like I said, you're competing in these other countries. No one can see you fight. I don't want to say, I had a great time. USC Boxing was the time of my life. I mean, I trained with my best friends. I traveled the world. It was awesome. But I can't do it for another 4 years because I have to capitalize on my youth, right?
Okay.
And people can't see you fight. And so you can't reel in the following, can't reel in the sponsors, can't, et cetera.
Right. Did you even consider at all trying to go for the 2020 games?
I think I knew right away. I fell into a slump after the Olympics for like a good 6 months. And I was like, I didn't really get anything. I'm like right back training for nationals, right? I'm like, okay, I didn't get the major sponsors I thought I was going to get. I didn't get my medal. I didn't really get a ton of recognition because they didn't pay a lot of attention to boxing. You know, it wasn't a very Americanized sport, so people aren't paying attention to it. And I just didn't get everything I wanted. I was kind of like right back at square one. I'm like, after 10 years, I was like, what do I do now? And that's why I started thinking, like, how can I – and I've always been a go-getter. I'm just like, okay, where can I go make the most money? Where can I go make the most of my career? Because that wasn't enough for me. And so
– I would imagine having to get to the idea I'll go do Bellator, I'll go do MMA is almost – does it feel like a defeat after all that time that you put into a sport that you have to go into a different sport in order to make money that you think you deserve?
So that's what I started thinking about, and I was like – it's like you're starting right back from the bottom. Like the top of my game box, now I'm going to start right back at the bottom again. And that's why I'm so glad I didn't go. And I almost lost sight of that, like, that dream I've always had. Because when I decided to box and do all this stuff and I'm going to get sponsored, I'm going to get this, there was no, like, path to follow. It was a non-existent career, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I was having to pave this way and create this career on my own. And I got so frustrated at the Olympics. I was just like, I don't know, maybe I almost lost sight of that. So I'm really, really happy that I stuck with boxing and that I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Way back in the day, you had a Dr. Pepper commercial. Was that 2013?
That funded my Olympic dream.
Did it?
Yes.
How big of a deal? Wow.
It's huge. It was huge.
They paid that much?
Yeah. They paid me a lot of money. And it funded my Olympic dream. I got that deal in 2013. I mean, the money lasted till 2016.
Wow.
So
that's incredible.
Without me having to work.
Just from
one commercial.
I stopped
working. Yeah, because you get residuals, and it was a huge commercial. It played during the Rose Bowl.
Wow.
And all that. So
how did you even get that?
They just called. I mean,
wow.
Honestly, I've always put it in my mind. Like, this is what I wanted to do. I need these sponsors. I need endorsements. And I think they got a hold of Coach Al first. They're just looking for unique people. It was one of a kind. That was the slogan.
Yes.
And So that was awesome because I was like, okay, I'm doing it. But then I didn't get another deal until 3 years later. So it was definitely a struggle. But that funded my Olympic dream. I was able to focus 100% and not have to work.
Every time, if you look up your story and the way people are sort of introduced you, it's like model turned fighter, model turned box, former model. Did you actually seriously model at any point?
No, I dabbled in modeling. It was something that everyone told me I should do, and so I thought that's what I should do. And I did a little bit. I did some photo shoots. I was trying to put together this portfolio and whatever, and I did some shoots, but I wouldn't really call myself. I was more of a boxer than ever was a model. But it was something that I really was passionate about, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go do this. But it was because everyone told me that's what I should do.
Right.
Oh, you're pretty, this, that. But I didn't love it, and I knew when I stepped into the boxing gym, like, this is what I wanted to do.
Does it bother you that you get recognition for your looks as well, like the sort of juxtaposition of the fact that you're good-looking but also a fighter who gets punched in the face? Does that bother you, or are you okay with that?
It doesn't bother me. I think it's, like, an intriguing dynamic to people, just because there's been this stereotype for fighters that you have to be rough and rugged. So,
right.
And you know what? I think that I represent a handful of people out there that maybe weren't represented before, because I remember when I first started boxing, I didn't want to wear pink to weigh-ins, right? Mm. I didn't want to wear anything girly, even though I was girly. I was a blonde California girl, and I wanted to wear my pink juicy suit.
Right.
But I wouldn't. I would dress in black or try and look the part because I wanted people to respect me or take me seriously. But now I know that I don't have to do that. I made it to the Olympics. I have a resume to prove it. And I'm confident now in my skills. So I'm just going to be who I am. And if that's girly sometimes, then whatever. And I think that represents a lot of women out there also.
What did your friends from school say about you doing this? Like, did they think it was weird? Were they supportive?
They were supportive, but then, you lose friends because I couldn't go. I didn't want to go out on Friday and Saturday nights anymore. I wanted to get up and train and run. So I lost a lot of friends, and it was just, and then I up and moved to Michigan and
right.
just kind of started a whole new life. So, but it was a sacrifice I made.
Now, I remember when Ronda brought you for the Amanda Nunes fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were in her camp for that?
Yeah.
That is one of the most mysterious, bizarre buildups to a fight ever, because she didn't speak to anyone.
She
was a mute.
Yeah.
She didn't talk to us even on fight week. The UFC gave her carte blanche to do nothing. She shows up and literally, to me, looked like a shell of her former self. Like, she got punched once, and then that was it, a 60-second fight. What was she like in that camp?
She honestly seemed really focused in that camp. I remember her being really lean, leaner mm-hmm. than normal, and she seemed happy and focused, and I think she just cut out that media because, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak for her, but she cut out that media just so she can zone it. Because, I can't imagine how much media would be after her at that
right.
stage in her career. So,
how did you link up with her?
I actually met her years and years ago, like right before she blew up.
Okay.
And we had a sparring session then. And so I knew her coach. And her coach contacted me through Instagram.
Edmund?
Yeah, Edmund.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, Michaela, we'd love some sparring from you if you're available. So I was like, yeah, awesome, for sure.
And what was it like being part of her camp?
It was fun. They were really cool. They set me up.
I feel
and
like you're not telling us the truth here, Michaela.
Well, I signed something. I'm not supposed to say anything about the camp.
Is that true?
Yeah.
NDA?
Yeah.
Is that a common thing?
I think so.
Oh, really?
I mean, I think when someone's doing...
That big?
When someone's that big, they obviously don't want me talking about the sparring and all
Even
that.
Even after
which,
the fact?
Yeah, I guess so.
Like 3 years later?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. So I can't tell you I can't ask you how she was in sparring.
No.
What she was like, you're not going to give me anything.
No.
Are you still you could have just said that at the top.
No.
You were trying to skirt around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well, just giving you,
Okay, I appreciate
no
it.
No details.
Are you still in touch with her now?
No, I mean, we follow each other on Instagram, but.
That's it.
Yeah.
No
she had an event out at the Wild Card West in
yeah.
Hollywood, which I went out and saw her to do that.
Okay.
But that's the last time I saw her. That was a couple months ago.
And you went to the fight? Her fight against Nunes.
Yeah.
You were there. Was
yeah.
that your first UFC fight?
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
It
From
was,
a show perspective. Not the fight itself. The whole production.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Super fun. And she got me front row seats too, or a couple seats back, third.
Okay.
So it was great. Yeah.
Are you surprised she hasn't fought again?
No.
No.
I mean, look, she's got an awesome career right now. It's WWE.
Right.
Making probably tons of money.
Right.
So, the fighting's a brutal sport. If you have, you do it to make money, right? We're all in here because we love it, but we're here to bust our ass. get the recognition and make some money. And, you know, you don't want to do it forever if you don't have to.
Would you ever do that? WWE stuff? Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I have, like, the type to do that. I don't know if I have, like, that...
Showmanship?
That, yeah.
Or showwomanship?
Yeah.
Getting on the microphone, talking smack, all that stuff.
Yeah,
flipping around.
I don't know. I mean, they pay me enough. I'll figure it out.
Sure, of course. You're a prize fighter, right? People get mad about when fighters say that. But at the end of the day, the belts are nice and all, but you want to make money.
Yeah, and we know we can't fight forever. So that's the goal. The goal is to build your name, build your brand here so that you can have a career after fighting, right? And so that's exactly what she's doing.
Now, I feel like the biggest fight or one of the biggest fights that can happen right now in female boxing is you versus Katie Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with me?
Yep.
How far away are we from this being a – you're with different promoters, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Can this even happen? Do you foresee a time that this happens? Is it something that you want to see happen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. And it just needs to happen at the right time because it would be a shame if the world wasn't watching.
Ah, okay. So it's too soon now.
It's too soon now because okay. I'm still able to make 130. She's fighting at 135. So yeah. I'm gonna take the belts at 130, take that division while I still can, and then sometime next year I'll move up to 135 and start fighting the girls there. And that's I think it'll be great because we'll both be champs.
Yeah.
Both have belts and. But there's a lot of other girls too, you know, so we'll see. We'll see.
I'm not trying to disparage them, but I feel like that could be one of the biggest.
It is. It is definitely big. She has a huge following in Europe, huge following in Ireland. Top Rank is helping me build my following here in the United States. So I think it's going to be an exciting fight.
Did you watch her fight on Saturday?
I did.
You did? Okay. You made a point to watch it.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor was there in the front row. Do you see that?
Yep.
Who's in the front row supporting you? You need more love.
I know.
American fighters need to support you.
I know.
He's like pumping her up, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Need to get behind you. How many fights is your Top Rank deal for? How does that work?
Well, it's a 5-fight-a-year contract, but they're overdoing it. I mean.
Okay.
I'm happy with it.
Okay.
I mean, it was 7 this last year, so.
How many years?
3.
3 years. So 1.5 or 1 and change is done.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean it's going to be the end. That was just what we started with. So.
Okay. But you can renegotiate in the middle?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've got to start paying more.
We'll definitely renegotiate. I mean, they were taking a risk with me. Okay. Can we develop a market for women's boxing? But I know, my manager knows, my team knows that we will.
Yes.
And so we know what we're going to do. And I think they're starting to believe in me too. So
you will be Top Rank's Ronda Rousey. You will break down all those doors.
I've always said I wanted to be the Ronda Rousey of boxing.
You know,
she's done so much and she's her success has crossed over into boxing because like I said, when I sat down at Top Rank, they see what, you know, Ronda and other girls, how they can be on big cards and headline fights and how it sells. So,
the next one is December 21st.
December 14th.
And where is it?
It's going to be in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so.
Very exotic.
My Texas fans.
And do we have an opponent yet?
No.
And are you going for another belt or are you defending your belt?
I believe I'll be defending my belt.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, in the next couple of fights, I want to get that WBC belt. I think the title holder right now, she's from Finland. So, literally, I have no say in my fights. Coach Al is like super, I mean, 75-year-old boxing coach from Philly. I mean, he's done this and he can do this in his sleep.
Yeah.
He's very particular. So I'm not even allowed to ask who I'm fighting until he comes to me and tells me. He's like, don't worry about it. You focus on this fight, get in the gym. I'll call you when I know what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
It's so different from our world.
Yeah.
It's completely different, but I like that. It's very old school.
It's very old school.
He'll guide you and you just follow him.
And he tells me, he's like, listen to me. He's like, I've done this. I have 11 Olympians, Michaela. I have 3 world champions. He's like, you'll be a world champion if you just listen to me. And I'm like, how can you say that?
Yeah.
After everything he's done for me.
Right.
I mean, you've got to believe him.
And so far, so good.
So far, so good. So far, I've listened.
I'm very happy for you. Thank you for doing
this.
I really
appreciate
it. Congrats on all your success. You're killing it.
Thank you.
On ESPN. If you can just sign our banner, that would be tremendous.
Sure.
We're having people sign our banner, and we're going to do something with that at some point. The next fight, ESPN or ESPN Plus? We don't know.
I don't know. Let's push for ESPN.
Let's
everyone
go linear.
Tag USA Box. Or tag Top Rank.
Old habits.
Tell
them
you want
to
see
hard.
Me.
But keep it up. Really, we're watching. We're supporting you. So I wish you the best continued success.
Thanks.
And thank you for changing your flight and all that stuff.
Yeah,
to come
no
in.
Problem.
This was a lot
good.
Of fun.
Everlast.
Michaela Mayer. Yes, thank you, Everlast.
Thank you, Everlast.
Thank you very much. Yeah, so if you don't mind just signing that on your way out, you could just do it yourself. It's very nonchalant here.
Okay.
We're still. Well, you're wondering about the marker. It's right over there. You see it?
Nope.
To the left. Like is that a Beyonce song? To the left? No, who is that?
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
It's Beyonce.
By the way, my mom just texted me that she loves you. So she's a big fan of yours, and I don't know if we have any gold markers over there, but close enough.
Okay.
There it is, Michaela Mayer, 2016 Olympian, fighting on ESPN once again on December 14th. That's ESPN television. All right, you best believe, and could have been a Bellator MMA fighter, but alas, destined for greater things in the world of professional boxing. 8-0 now, soon to be 9-0, just won a belt, many more to come. Thank you so much for stopping by, Michaela. All the best to you, and we'll talk to you very soon. Thank you so much for coming in studio as well. There she is, Michaela Mayer. What a great pleasure that was. Great to have her in studio. And a reminder that Eddie Alvarez would be joining us, or will be joining us, in a matter of moments. And my wife, by the way, Michaela, in case you wanted to know, is a big fan of yours as well. She just texted me. Eddie Alvarez is going to be in studio in a little bit as well. So how about that? Great to have Michaela Mayer in studio. Eddie Alvarez is going to be joining us. That was a lot of fun. I enjoyed having her in studio. And I remember, you'll recall if you watched the Countdown show, that she was a part of Ronda's camp for that Amanda Nunes fight way back when, UFC 207? Yes, I do believe. Didn't work out, but I don't think it was her fault. Okay. Matter of moments, we are hopefully going to connect with Darren Till. Haven't heard from him much since his loss to Tyron Woodley, as you may recall. And then after that, we'll be joined by Eddie Alvarez. Still to come is Valentina Shevchenko. I posted a photo of Valentina Shevchenko training with Chris Cyborg. She's in California right now, training with Cyborg for their respective title fights. Cyborg fighting UFC 232 against Amanda Nunes, and Valentina fighting, of course, on December 8th, UFC 231 against Joanna Jacek. Last week, we had Joanna Jacek on the program to explain to us what happened with her fighting Valentina Shevchenko, and then that fight getting canceled, and then of course, it went to Sajara Eubanks against Shevchenko at Madison Square Garden, and then they canceled that fight after they got the main event between Daniel Cormier and Derek Lewis, and then they put Shevchenko back with Joanna Jacek. So we got her side of the story, and I thought, well, to complete the entire, you know, saga, if you will, let's get Valentina. So Valentina is coming up in around an hour's time. Eddie Alvarez coming up in around 15-20 minutes here in studio. After the live program, I remind you that the post show will be up on YouTube and iTunes and all those places and more. New York Rick not here today. New York Rick is actually in Hawaii, the lucky bastard. He is there with his family. A mazel tov to, I think, his sister-in-law, who's getting married over there in Hawaii. So he is not here, but he will be joining us via the magic of Skype. After the post show, if all goes according to plan, we are actually going to be joined by another guest. That will be a taped interview that will be coming out later on today. I cannot at this time reveal who said guest is, but I will tell you that said guest has not talked in a while, and I will tell you that said guest is someone that you have talked about for a while and have wanted to hear from for a while. Is that a good enough hint or two for you? He is someone who has been in the news. He is someone who we have wondered what's on his mind. He is someone who we have wondered what's up with him. And hopefully later on today we'll be taping an interview with him, and that interview will be coming out later on this evening. So that's all coming up as we move
towards the end of the day. All right. I've been wanting to hear from Darren Till for quite some time. I've been wanting to talk to Darren Till for quite some time, and I know that you all share that sentiment as well. He has been on our minds, all wondering what's next for him, what direction he goes in post-UFC 228. He is kind enough to be joining us on the phone right now, straight from his home in Liverpool. Darren, how are you?
What's happening, mate? You okay? Good to speak to you.
Oh, yes. It's a pleasure. I really appreciate you doing this, Darren. Thank you so much. So there's obviously a lot to talk about. What has life been like the last, you know, month and a half or so after that whirlwind, UFC 228? Have things quieted down, calmed down a little bit for you?
Yeah, it's okay, mate. As I say, I haven't been too much out there in the media and that after my fight. You know, I just I just wanted to take a few weeks to sort of, you know, reflect on my life and how far I've come and what I've achieved. And you know, obviously, my last fight, it was a difficult one. It was a tough one. But, you know, mate, you can't just have an upward, it's not like an upward ladder in life where everything's just positive. There's the negatives as well. So 228 for me was a negative. And, you know, I'll just face it head on. And it is what it is. I got beat by a better man.
Did you feel like you need a little bit of like a, I don't know, like a detoxification? There was so much hype and so much buzz leading up. Like you just wanted to get away from the spotlight a little bit after the fight?
Yeah and no, because it's been a year yesterday since I fought Cowboy. And, you know, that year for me has been a big year. Just, you know, as you say, a lot of hype, a lot of people, you know, depending on me, and people are so confident that you're going to be the champion, and then, you know, you get that chance, you fight for the belt, and, you know, it's not that I lost, it's the way I got beat. I didn't feel like I was able to showcase myself, and as I say, mate, you know, I got beat fair and square, and I just wanted to have a few weeks to think, to reflect, and to obviously plan my next move.
Have you had a chance to watch that fight? Have you sat down and actually rewatched the fight against Tyron?
Yeah, I've watched it quite a few times. You know, I've seen it in highlights passing by, and it just is what it is, mate. You know, I was just in my feeling process in the first two rounds. I just didn't feel as angry as I usually feel. Like, I felt like too relaxed. So, you know, that's a bad thing to do with a guy like Tyron Woodley, because, you know, one wrong move, and it was me or him getting knocked out, and obviously it was him. You know, I just feel like I made that mistake of just stepping in with my guard low, and that's where he was able to find the counter. And props to him, he's definitely been working that counter in the gym against me, and he caught me with it. So, you know, as I say, mate, it is what it is. It's one of them. It's four, isn't it? You can't win them all.
Why do you think, like, do you have any theory as to why you were relaxed? Biggest fight of your life, title fight, main event, all that and more. Why do you feel like you were relaxed?
Yeah, as you say, because it's the biggest fight. I just felt like in camp, you know, weight, camp, everything just went so perfect. You know, usually in camp, I'm carrying injuries and everything, and everything just went so well. You know, I felt so good. You know, I mean, the weight things is it wasn't an issue for that. I just feel maybe I concentrated so much on making weight, and I doubted myself so much that I could make the weight, because I had that many people saying, you know, online, whatever, and the journalists, every time they spoke to me, it was always a question of weight. I think I concentrated more on weight than I did the fight, because in my mind, I was beating Tyron Woodley no matter what. But I had to concentrate on Tyron Woodley, and sometimes in training, I was thinking about more how many kilos I've lost, or, you know, stuff like that. So then things, they come into play, and it was the first time for me, you know, that much pressure on making weight. It was bad in a sense, because I felt like I was the only fighter who ever missed weight, and every question was about weight, and every time the UFC would post something, the comments wasn't about how much of a good fight it was going to be. It was, Darren Till is going to miss weight, the fight's not going to happen. And sometimes when you see that, even if you've got, like, you know, mate, I'm a strong man, the guy, but it gets to you. You think, fucking hell, do you think I can make weight? And then you start doubting yourself. So I think I had that much doubt. I wanted to prove that many people wrong I could make weight. I think the whole fight camp and the fight for me, I was just more about weight. And then when I've made weight, I'm sort of like, oh yeah, I'm fighting one of the best welterweights of all time, let's do it. So I think I was just so relaxed because I hadn't concentrated that much on the fight. But as I say, mate, I'm not using this as an excuse. There's no way that night there's no way I was winning. It was Tyron Woodley was winning, the better man.
In hindsight, do you wish you had a fight or two more,
before the title fight that maybe it was a little too soon after the Wonder Boy fight, or did that not cross your mind?
No. Listen, I know Pete Dunne. I know I can beat Tyron Woodley. I mean, still, he is what he is, mate. He's one of the best welterweights of all time. I know I can beat him on any given night. And, you know, he showed me massive respect before and after the fight. And because it's because he knows the caliber of a fighter I am. It's just one of them, mate. You know, imagine if I would have won the fight, everyone would have been saying, well, so just because I've lost, it doesn't mean it was too soon. I don't feel like anyway, you know. But yeah, I'm still young and I'm still growing. As you say, I'm still only 25 and I've got a lot more things to do and I'm not finished. It's my first loss and people either are with you after this loss or people thrive off it. You know, when you lose, you know, you get certain fighters that are, you know, they're happy that you lost. You get fighters that not know that what it's like to lose and it is what it is. You know, if I'm ever having beef with a guy who's a fighter, no matter what, if he loses a fight, you never see me trying to put the guy down. Yeah, talking shit, it's okay, but, you know, I just don't ever see, like, the point in putting a fighter down when he's lost. That's when he's at his lowest. You know, I can openly say, I went back to the changing room and I fucking cried my eyes out to my coach and to my training partners because I was gutted. But the day after, I was just like, it is what it is. Fuck it, let's just fucking start working again.
Well, I have to give you credit, and especially hearing how much it affected you. You know, you handled that like a champ, man. Yeah. Like you handled that like a pro. I saw you doing all the media afterwards. You talked to everyone. You gave no excuses. You showed up. You didn't hide. I mean, I know how much you were hurting inside, and to even hear that you were crying afterwards, I think you deserve a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, well, you know, as I say, you know, I've got nothing else in my life. I don't live. A lot of fighters, they have other things in their life. I've got nothing else in my life apart from fighting. I don't live to anything on a day-to-day basis. The only thing I do have to look forward to is fighting. And as I say, mate, I've set out to be the best, and I can't stop until I achieve that. So to lose in such a way, I wouldn't have minded, mate, if I would have lost a fight on a five-round war, but it's just the fashion in what I lost. It really did hurt me, and I'm not afraid to say that. You know, I cried. I felt embarrassed to look some people in the eye because I know that people depended on me. But at the end of the day, mate, it's me stepping in there. It's not someone else, you know, doing all that. The torture that we go through as fighters. You know, I say it openly, mate, I don't think there's anyone out there. I think there's very few fighters that work as hard as I work under my coach, Colin, the regime I go through with him. I really do pull everything I've got into it. So to lose that way, yeah, of course, I went back to the change room after it. After all the interviews and cried my eyes out, you cried like a baby. But the day after, I was like, okay, you've lost the fight. Let's just fucking get on with life. It's not the end of the world.
Have you decided that you're done at welterweight, Darren?
I don't know. I know that a lot of, I mean, I haven't been on much media, but I know that, you know, I spoke to my sponsor, Paddy Power, and, you know, I said I might consider it. I haven't made a final decision yet, but it's just, you know, I just don't ever want to be training again and worrying about how much I'm going to be eating or worrying about weight for the fight. I want to just train as hard as I train, but make sure that there's 100% focus on the fight itself, who I'm going to destroy. I don't want to be thinking, oh, shit, I've ate a little bit extra than I should have. Fuck, that means I'm going to have to run an extra 20 minutes. You know, I don't want that shit. I want to be eating fucking steaks the week before the fight and going in there and smashing someone up. So I just, right now, I don't know. The only advice I'm going to take is from my coach, and you know, I've spoke to the UFC a little bit, but I'm not at a decision yet. I'm not at a decision yet when I'm, you know, welterweight's done. I just don't know right now.
What is your coach saying? What does he want you to do?
We haven't really spoke, to be honest. There, you know, my girlfriend is literally about to drop. She's any minute now. She can have the baby. So,
wow.
My only focus now is taking care of her. Yeah, like. Today we were in the hospital, so you know, you're the only man I've spoke to on the phone today.
Oh man, well I appreciate it.
Yeah, don't worry, mate. It's just right now, me and my coach haven't really spoke a lot. You know, I've been training, obviously, but you know, I think he's just letting me have a few weeks where I don't think about a fight and I don't think about anything. I just think about, obviously, this year I've been so selfish in training and. My girlfriend has followed me every step of the way. I think these next few weeks now need to be really about her and taking care of her. So that's what I've been doing.
Just curious though, like, what direction, do you have a direction you're leaning towards? I mean, you say that it's such a nightmare and you want to worry about just the fight and eating steaks and all that stuff. Why would you even consider 170 anymore?
Yeah, that's what I say, Ariel. I haven't made a final decision yet. Yeah, it could be middleweight. I feel like I'm not one of the biggest guys. I'm a big enough guy to fight at that weight. You know, obviously, look at a guy like Gastelum. He's a small dude, and he went up to middleweight, and he's doing perfectly fine. He's a great fighter, and you know, I just feel like in my life area, I've lifted very minimal. You know, I don't lift a lot of weights, and I feel like if I started, you know, getting on a proper weight regime and training the way I could be training with a full belly and stuff like that, I feel at middleweight I'd really have a lot of crazy power and I could be hitting a lot of these middleweights. And, you know, that's just what I think. All I could stay at welterweight and still be clever with the cut and do what I do. But as I say, mate, I really just can't give you the final answer. I'll know definitely in the next few weeks. So I will see.
Is it fair to say that you're taking the rest of the year off? You're not looking to fight in 2018?
Not really, no, because I just want to, as I say, get these few weeks out the way now with my girlfriend and the newborn that's on its way. And then, you know, I can be back in the gym full time and obviously if the UFC say we can get you on the Christmas card or just before Christmas or even just after, I'm there and I'm ready. You know, I'm not rushing anything, Ariel. Nothing needs to be rushed. You know, I'm at a point now where, you know, I've achieved. I have really come a long way, I feel, in myself. And I've still got 10 years left to do what I really want to do. So I'm not really in no rush. But obviously I want to fight again. That's what I love to do. I love to fight. You know, I'd love Woodley to stay around for a few years and get that rematch with him in a few years. That's what I'd love.
And okay, so right now you're about to, like any second now, you're about to have your second child, correct?
Yeah.
And is it a girl as well?
It's a girl, yeah. I'm going to have two girls in me. Like.
Well done. I know you took some heat afterwards. You had some comments about, you know, I only care about myself. I don't care about my family. Did you feel like that was misunderstood at all? I mean, I don't know if it could be misquoted because it's a video clip, so there it is. But did you feel like people didn't quite understand what you were trying to say in that clip?
Yeah, I think that was just misunderstood, mate. Like, obviously this year, as I said, I've been selfish towards myself and my girlfriend has supported me. Now, you know, there's no fight in line. I've just had the biggest fight in my career. I'm all about my family now. It's, you know, I'm all about, can't wait for the next time I go to Brazil. Can't wait to have my newborn. I'm dad until the family man needs, you know, since the fight. And you know, I just, that's who I am right now. Okay. That's what it is. But then obviously I get back into fight training again, and you know, obviously I just have to focus solely on myself, because what I do is ultimately for myself and for them, my family, you know. So right now, you know, I'm dad until my family man.
And by the way, like how much do you weigh right now?
Not that much, Ariel. I haven't really been concentrating on food, so this is what I mean.
No donuts?
Like I have been eating, but not like my usual self after the fight, because, you know, when I win a fight, I've ate that food. Right now, I don't feel like every bite of a donut, I feel like, oh, I don't deserve that. You know, I have been eating, yeah, but I'm just not as heavy as you would expect. I'm 91K, so that's 91K, you know. I heard the other day a rumor that Max Holloway cuts from, like, I don't know if this is the truth, so don't take it as a fact, lad. He cuts from, like, 87K for 145, which is just mental. I don't know if it's true, but I know he is a big dude.
Wow, so that's around like 200 pounds, 91 kilos.
91 kilos, yeah, that's around 200 pounds. So, you know, that's me not training, you know, every day. So if I was training every day, I could be like 190, 195, which is, you know, still for welterweight, it's not as big as what you think when you look at all these guys who cut that weight.
I'm reading the quotes that you told Paddy Power, and like you were pretty definitive in those quotes. Like, I'm moving up to middleweight. I might go back down, but I'm excited to see what it's like at middleweight. Did you have a change of heart since you told them that?
No, it's what I said. It's just at the moment I said it, and sometimes I say things and I don't know that it's going to get like be that viral. And yeah, you know, I was just thinking that day, yeah, middleweight, but you know, I'm probably, my next fight is probably, you know, I say 70% going to be at middleweight, but we'll see, mate. We'll see if it's the right choice. I just want to make the right choice. That's all I want to do.
Right.
You know, I'm definitely going to be at middleweight. There's no doubt about it, but, you know, my coach did say something about him wanting me to have a few more fights at welter. There's just some fights that he wants me to have, so, you know, it just lingers in the mind, doesn't it?
Okay, so it's eventually going to happen. The big question is whether it happens in the very near future next, essentially, right?
I think that's it. It's definitely going to happen. It's just whether when. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I said after your fight in September that it reminded me of when George St. Pierre lost to Matt Hughes. And what I meant by that was he lost his first title fight. He learned from it. We all saw that he had, you know, championship qualities to his game, came back and eventually won the belt. I feel like I was watching the same thing. Like maybe it was a little soon. Maybe they rushed you into it, but you were there, you lost. And I feel like at some point you will be a better man as a result of it. Do you see what I'm saying? Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I do agree. It was good to taste defeat like that. It was just good to. Woodley's lost, St. Pierre's lost, all these greats have lost. You know, it does something to you inside. I've lost before, Ariel, in Muay Thai and boxing, but just because I had such a perfect record, and as I say, so many people, you know, depended and were just confident. I mean, you'd have a loss like that. You know, as I say, the way I lost, you know, I get knocked down and then I'm just eating elbows for fun and then, you know, I get submitted. It hurts deep down, mate, and it's like a thorn that I'll probably never be able to take out of me unless I get a rematch. And I have to live with that now, and I have to show how I'm going to come back from it. And, you know, I'm not arsed, mate. It's not like it's going to affect me anyway. It's just a loss. And truth be told, you know, if anyone said it didn't hurt, you know, I'm okay. Did I lie? You know, it, of course, it hurts.
Well, I think you've been handling it very well. I see you've taken a bit of a break. You're not tweeting or anything like that. You're kind of taking some time to yourself, to your family. And I think that's okay. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. It was a whirlwind, well, right?
I'll be back on Twitter soon giving shit, mate, so don't worry about that.
All right. Well, I had no idea that your girlfriend was giving birth any second now, so I really appreciate you doing this, Darren. I know you haven't talked a lot. It means a lot. Thank you so much for squeezing us in. Best of luck to her. Best of luck to the baby. And early congratulations to you and the family on number two coming up. That's very exciting stuff.
I appreciate that. And I will be back stronger. You trust me on that. You watch what I do. You just watch.
I can't wait. Thank you, Darren. All the best to you.
Thanks, mate. Bye-bye.
All right, there he is, Darren Till. Always a pleasure to talk to the gorilla, and congratulations to him and his girlfriend, and of course, best of luck as they're about to embark on having their first child together and Darren's second girl. That's exciting stuff. So hold the phone on Darren Till, middleweight. He says that he's still considering welterweight. We'll see what happens there. All right, big news last week. Eddie Alvarez, the hottest free agent in mixed martial arts, is now with one championship, and guess what? For his first interview, he's here in studio. Eddie A, the Underground King. Let me stand up. Royalty in the house. Wow, look at this. Oh, wow, what an honor this is. Kensington, Philadelphia in the house. Wow, look at this guy. I feel the richness just oozing out of your body. Look at you, the hottest free agent in the game. Eddie Alvarez, welcome, my man.
It's good to be here.
Yes. Now come a little closer to the microphone over there if you just want to scoot your chair. Yeah.
Wow. Something in my way here.
Yeah, but you're good.
Good to go.
How are you?
Excellent.
What do we got? What is this hat that you're wearing?
Dig Me.
What's that?
I'm always repping Dig Me. So they're a clothing brand.
Okay.
My buddy Ray owns it. I'm always supporting these guys. I got their jackets, their hats. Tip your cap. Give respect.
I don't know if this is rude, but can you bump that? I want to see your eyes. And there's a bit of a shadow. There you go. Yep. Okay.
There
yeah.
You go.
Wow, you're looking good, man. Jeez, you got a tan and everything. You're looking fresh. You got that shirt. That's a nice shirt. Is that a new one?
Yeah, I should have brought one for you.
Yeah, it would have been nice. Who did that?
I'll send it. We get them done before every fight. Different colors. Like, we get them done before every fight. It's like a neighborhood thing.
Okay.
Only Philly people have these shirts. So.
Okay, wow.
You'll be the one and only.
Don't forget, I went to Kensington myself.
In New York.
I'll never forget it.
You didn't pick your shirt up when you were.
No, I did not. Wow. Well, I really appreciate you doing this. I appreciate you coming in. Congratulations.
I'm super, super happy to
yes.
be here.
Yes. Congratulations. Really, what a handshake you have. We have a lot to discuss.
Yeah.
We have a ton to discuss. I actually want to start back in July before all of this. You fight Dustin Poirier.
Mm-hmm.
Fight doesn't go your way. Mm-hmm. Your coach is lambasted. Mark Henry, the great Mark Henry. Everyone's ripping on him for giving you bad advice.
Yeah.
You've not really talked since then. Is Mark Henry to blame for that loss?
No, come on. Look, we're a team. So when things go right, we blame each other. When things go wrong, we blame each other. So we're a team. I'm one part of the puzzle inside that cage. There's me, there's Ricardo, Mark, and Ray Robinson. We're all in there together. So a mistake was made. It's fist fighting. There's a very small margin for error, especially when you're fighting a guy like Dustin or anybody in the top five, top 10 or whatever. Very small margin for error. We made a mistake. We paid for it and I've been on the other end of them, so it is what it is.
So what's interesting about that fight was that you gambled on yourself, right? It was much talked about that you were going to be a free agent, that there were some talks beforehand, but you're like, nah, I want this fight to play out, then I'll test the market.
Yeah.
How much did the loss hurt? You know, we're not in the one talks yet, right? We're just Saturday night after the loss, you're all bloodied up, you're in Calgary, and you're like, man, I gambled and I lost my last fight. How much did it sting?
It hurt me.
Yeah, well, just knowing that, okay, this is not just a loss, this is the last fight on my contract, so maybe I've now, you know, gone down in terms of leverage, right?
Yeah, so that was definitely a thought of mine, but I think how you fight overall also has to do with leverage. And leverage always goes to the man who's willing to walk. And there hasn't been one single contract during my career where I wasn't willing to walk, like if I felt like I wasn't going to get paid what I thought I was worth. So, you know, UFC, Bellator, no matter who the promotion is, if you're a fighter and you know your value, if you're willing to walk, you'll always hold the cards as a free agent.
Okay.
And so, you know, it stung. I held a lot on that win. I was sure I was going to win the fight. I went into the fight gambling on myself and I lost. Monetarily, did it hurt me? No, not at all.
And we will get to that.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so then now you go back home and you're about to embark on being a free agent. What's the process? Are people coming at you? Is the UFC coming at you? Or was it a slow process? How does that all start?
So no promotions are allowed to speak to you about contractual. Like the minute, the week of, you're in a exclusive negotiation period with the UFC.
Okay.
So immediately when you go to free agency, you are not allowed to speak to anyone about numbers or anything like that. People can say they'll express interest, you know, Bellator, ONE FC, all these other promotions are allowed to say, we are interested, but we're waiting for you to get out of your exclusive negotiation period before we can discuss any details or any numbers or anything like that.
And how much is that? How long is that?
30, 60 days. I'm not 100% sure, but I know that the UFC, they were pretty, like we sat down with them and we went to them face to face. We flew out to Vegas to sit down with them. We didn't want to, elongate the process. We wanted to make a decision and make it as quick as possible for UFC and for myself. So we did that.
So how did that go? That face to face meeting, and who's in the meeting?
In the meeting was, me, Lloyd, my agent, Lloyd Pearson, and JJ, our attorney,
mm-hmm.
our attorney as well, Jen Goldstein.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the UFC's part, it was Dana, Sean Shelby, and their attorney as well. It's not coming to mind.
Hunter Campbell.
Hunter yes. Campbell. Yep.
General counsel.
So the meeting was like surprisingly like real lighthearted. There was no, you know, everybody was very agreeable. You know, I didn't know what to expect because you're negotiating. I'm saying what I feel I'm worth. Whether you guys think it or not, it's up to you, but there's definitely an argument to be had there. But everything was it was a normal meeting. Dana was surprisingly cool as hell. They didn't, you know, he was fine as well. Everybody was cool. I didn't there was no things. We were laughing a lot, talking, joking. It was fine.
Did they actually make you an offer that day?
Yeah, okay. that day. I felt I was worth it. They knew what I wanted going in. We spoke about it a number of times, and you know, they came close.
Oh, really?
I can't, UFC made a really good offer.
Okay. Like,
I was under the notion that I feel like all fighters are underpaid. Period.
Yep.
Like all fighters in general, for the value that we bring and how much the promotions make overall, not just the UFC, but all promotions, what they make versus what is paid out. I feel like all fighters are underpaid. So, now we have to compare, You know, now as a free agent, we have to compare our contracts to the market. But I was already under the notion that the market is really low. Mm. Like, what is the comparables are already real low. So I wasn't necessarily going to compare my contract to my colleagues, like, you know, to Frankie's or Marlins or even guys who are in the same sort of ranking that I am. I wasn't going to do that because I already think everybody's not getting paid enough. Mm. So I had a number, and UFC almost met it, almost not totally, but we were almost there. And I said, okay, they made a really good offer. I said, just give me a day. I just want a little bit of time to think, and I'll go home and think about it, and then I'll call Lloyd up, call my management, and figure out what, or call my agent, and figure out what I want to do. So after a day, I could not sign the deal. I just couldn't.
Why?
Because I think the value of free agency today is so incredible to give that up to a fighter. For any fighter to give that up, to give up free agency, is foolish. I think there's so much value in it today that if you're an agent out there and you're not and you're sort of re-signing your fighters and not allowing them to test free agency, it's a little bit foolish. Hmm. And I'm a fighter who's been fighting 15 years, who not just understands the fight game, but I understand the economics of the fight game, the business part of it. Free agency is so powerful today. It's not always been. It's not always been powerful. Today it is really powerful. If you really want to make money in this sport, you really want to test your value and see how much you're worth, you become a free agent. I would say there is no other option.
Wow. So you felt that you would be doing yourself a disservice if you didn't at least test the market. You like the deal, you're okay with the deal, but I got to see what else is out there.
Huge. I mean, I'd be curious for the next 4 years. I'd be ripping the little bit of hair that I have left out of my head thinking about, was there a deal out there? Was there a monster deal that I didn't know about? What is this guy willing to offer? What is that guy want? I would have not been able to sleep at night re-signing a deal and not knowing what my full potential was. So, I called my agent and I asked, can we respectfully like decline the initial offer? And I asked to, go out and, you know, play the field, you know, and that's a weird conversation to have.
Yeah. Cause
it's like going to a girlfriend and saying, hey, can I date all these other girls and see if I still like you?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, weird. But, you know, UFC, Dana was right away.
Yeah. They took it well.
No problem.
Wow.
No problem. And I think a part of it had to do with, you know, I respect Dana. Dana respects me. There's a lot of mutual respect there. I'm super honest with Dana when we talk, and he is with me as well. So, I think we have a good relationship, and he said, yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, so then you go out. What do you see? What do you start to hear?
So we go out, and I mean, if everyone's interested.
Okay.
Everyone. From Russia to Poland to bare knuckle fighting to
yeah.
to everyone. Everyone's interested. Everyone wants to sit down and talk. And then and then 1FC comes about. Even the PFL and everybody – who is a promotion, who is in the fight game, small or little, wanted to sit down and at least have a conversation and talk.
Did you have a conversation with all these people?
The majority of them. I said to Lloyd, my agent, if we're going to do this, we want every option in the book, and then we can wean them out. And that's what we did.
Is that overwhelming or is that a fun process?
Super exciting.
Oh, you like it?
So fun.
Yeah.
So fun that, I mean, I implore any fighter, I would push any fighter today, do it.
Do it.
Do it out of the excitement. Forget.
You're the bell of the ball. Everyone's coming to you with their pitch.
Yeah, we're fighters. We're risk takers, you know, in general, which is odd. We're risk takers by nature.
Yeah.
But no fighter wants to become a free agent because they're worried about the risk involved.
That's true.
If we're willing to walk out of a tunnel, go into a cage, fight another man, risk embarrassment in front of millions of people, what are you so worried about becoming a free agent? Like,
right.
I, especially myself, I'm a risk taker by nature. I take risk. That's what I do. I do it in a cage. Sometimes they're not good for me. Sometimes they work out. But the excitement in doing it is, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it's a fun process.
So how does it start with one? You reach out to them or they reach out to you?
I believe they were already saying they were interested along with a bunch of other people. But one was one of the first companies that kind of reached out, and they were ready to get going pretty quickly, and they were wanting to put an offer in pretty quickly.
Wow. So, and was it a good offer?
It was through the roof.
Better than the UFC's?
Crushed everyone, everything, wow. Everybody. Like, not, there wasn't anything within a, they lapped everyone.
Really?
Yeah.
So did it become clear very early on, one is the leader here? Like, no one came close to them. They're the one?
Yeah. Well,
pardon the pun.
The thing with the UFC is there's a lot of there's intrinsic value to the UFC. You can't just go apples to apples with the UFC. You can't say, I'm gonna make $100,000 with the UFC. So if someone offers me $150 here, then I'm gonna take the $150 because the stage of the UFC is different. You got to add sure. You got to add some other things. But when you look at a player like Juan, when you go to Asia, they're the most dominant force, you know, in that aspect of the world. And then you have the UFC, who's dominant here in America. So these are two of the same exact players, two giant, massive media stages, that the intrinsic value isn't so much there that you thought it would be. So, I'm super excited. That one made me a partner in their promotion. It was more of a partnership than it was, hey, you're going to come on as a fighter and here's your money to fight and that's it. They made me a true partner in the promotion.
What do you mean by that? Like legit? Like you get a piece, like you're like an actual business partner?
It's a package deal. Okay. Like it's not, hey, fighters today are, oh, what do I get to win? What do I get
sure,
to show?
Sure.
Which I think is complete. I haven't did a win and show contract in 10 years and right. I never will. But, it's a package. It's a package. It's nothing like a normal MMA contract. They made me a true partner in the promotion.
Well, can you tell us the terms of this package? Like, you don't have to tell us the monetary terms, but like, what are the items that we're talking about in this package? And if you want to tell us the monetary terms, you know,
without getting into detail,
okay.
the package in general, it's going to be an 8-figure deal.
Whoa.
Yeah. Eight figure fight deal.
How many years?
A guaranteed 8-figure fight deal.
In total. How many years?
Not as many as you think.
Really?
But they made me a true partner, which what I'm happy about. They fully committed to me and we are fully committing back. That's where we're at with 1FC.
Is this deal so good that you're almost surprised how good it is? Or do you feel like, no, this is the deal that I've earned, that
this,
I deserve?
This is the deal. When I left the table at UFC.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to go out to explore. This is the deal I had in my mind.
Wow.
So this is the deal that I felt was out there for almost every guy in the top five of the UFC who has a massive name. There's a lot of promotions with a lot of money.
Yeah.
And there isn't a lot of free agents.
Mm.
There's barely any.
Right.
So it's supply and demand. if there's massive promotions with massive capital rate, like – there's promotions that have capital raises every couple months, another capital raising. UFC does it, 1FC does it, Bellator does it. They all do it. And to be a free agent in a market like that, it's exciting. It's super exciting. And one stepped up big time. They basically put me, my family first, not just short term, because the short term is awesome, but long term.
How much did you know about ONE before all of this? Like, do you watch their fights? Have you been a fan of theirs?
Yeah, I actually like watching their Muay Thai stuff they put on, because they have some of the best Muay Thai fights in all of the sport. But the promotion in general, it's on an app. It's on an app,
yeah.
On the 1FC app, and it's super cool. Pops right up. As soon as you pop on the app, it pops right up.
You don't have to sign up or anything.
Live events, everything is free.
Yeah.
So, because you don't have to pay for it, it's all free, you know. I'll go to fight, and I think it was 25 million people tuned in to the last ONE FC.
Wow.
And this is 25 new fans,
right,
that I'll have. Not, I fight in America. I have a lot of fans in America. I love fighting for the fans here, but this is 25 million new fans that I'll have in Asia, which is also exciting.
So once you got that incredible deal from ONE, did you then go back to the UFC and see if they would match it?
No, when I spoke to Dana originally, when I spoke to Dana and I said to him, look, to be fair, I'm not going out to go find someone else and then come back to you and then barter, and that's not what I wanted to do. I wasn't trying to play the UFC or play a game with anybody. I said, I want to go out, and if we find a person who is willing to put, you know, my family, me first, a long term, make us a partner, then I'm probably going to end up with them. And he respected that. He said, I understand, no problem. And it was a clean cut. There was no like hiccups with me, Dana. No story that you want to hear. I know you want to.
No,
you want to hear. No,
what are you talking about?
You want to hear some goods.
No,
and I wish I had something to tell
My
you.
My hands are clean.
There isn't. Me and Dana, everything went really well.
Okay. Did Bellator, because they were very quick to keep saying like, oh, we're not interested, which I found to be an interesting, you know, move on their part, because why wouldn't they be interested, especially with the Chandler fight there? Were there any serious talks with Bellator?
So they called most frequent, I think.
Okay. Oh, wait, there you go.
Did I just lower my level here? Sorry, guys.
You see it? Oh, now you just went even lower. See, that's what happens when you tell me that I'm looking for the smoke, you know?
So,
the gods bring you down.
Bellator, I think, called the most frequent about being interested, but when it came down to putting together a deal on a contract or something like that, I think they said, hey, let's sit down and come on out, fly out. But before you fly out, like, what are you sort of thinking in your head? And when we gave them our number, what we were thinking.
That was it.
They called back the next day and we're like, I don't think we're going to make an offer.
Would that have been weird to go back to Bellator after everything that happened? Like, I feel like you wouldn't have been.
It was not my.
Yeah.
It was not my first pick.
Right.
It definitely wasn't.
It's interesting, and I kind of got into it, and I try not to get into it with the fans on Twitter, but I sort of did because I like felt like they weren't really seeing the situation for what it was. I got a lot of people when we were reporting this being like, oh, great job, Eddie. Like, you just took the easy way out. Oh, you just blew it. Great job going and fighting in obscurity. And I was like, no, you morons. Like, Eddie Alvarez has won every belt, has fought for every promotion. Eddie Alvarez won. He's the rare exception. This is the guy who actually, like, don't look at it from a fanboy perspective. Look at it from the actual, you know, one in a million fighter who's actually going out on his term and getting paid. Like, you're not Ben Askren. And what I mean by that is Ben Askren in his prime went to ONE and we couldn't really find out how good he was. You've won every belt in every organization. Go out and win another one and get paid in the process. Have you gotten that a lot as well? People be like, oh, I want to see you in the UFC. I wanted to see you stick around. I'm disappointed in you. Things like that.
So, little, tiny bit.
Okay.
The overall reaction that I got has been super positive by
good.
Fans,
good.
which I didn't expect.
What did you expect?
I expected big fish, small pond,
right,
blah,
right,
blah,
right.
All this. But I think if anybody followed my career, I never re-signed with a promotion.
Mm.
Ever. Ever. During my whole career did I say, okay, let's re-up.
That,
wow. Never. I honestly think it's a little bit. You're doing yourself an injustice. You're lowering your own value. So I think it's always important to test free agency, to keep for the very reason to keep a business honest. It's test free agency just to keep everyone honest. So to know for your own good what your value is overall to with every promotion, not just one single one.
What's also huge about this is, and I say it as well, we call it free agency. But there's not real free agency in MMA in the sense that, like, if you play for the Phillies and your contract is up, now you have 30 other teams that are available to you. In our sport, free agency in the last couple of years has been UFC Bellator UFC. Oh, maybe the one guy who goes here. If ONE is now actually a player, right, and they're actually and from what I hear, big things are coming one's way.
Big
and
things.
You're the beginning of it all. This changes a lot. Now there's a third major player, and who knows what happens with PFL and what they're doing. Now we're talking real options, real free agency. Now we're getting into the boxing model, which I think is healthy for the sport that there's more options. I know the fans are a little bit selfish. They want everyone under the same umbrella. But if you are a true fan of fighting and fighters, you want more options because that means you guys get paid. So I feel like this is a major development in terms of the evolution of the sport as well.
My deal single-handedly should change the pay structure of almost every fighter. It should. And it should bring awareness to free agency, period. That don't re-sign a deal. I mean, what especially, it's not worth not risking. The raise that you're given at the end of your contract is not worth not being a free agent. The value of a free agent, it's super undervalued by fighters. I don't think they understand what's out there. They just see what the guy who's doesn't have a great contract on the right or left of them, they're comparing it to an already not that good of a contract. And they're saying, all right, well, I'm getting a little more than him, so I'm just going to re-sign. Or I'm getting a little more than him. The truth is, it's everyone's severely underpaid, and until you get to a free agency, you know, just like you do in a cage, put your cup in, put in your mouthpiece, grab your balls, and test free agency. I don't know, like you'll be shocked and surprised how many people need you.
Do you think that it would help if these terms were public, like in every other sport? The athletes know what their, you know, competitors are making, what their colleagues are making, if you will, what their peers are making. In our sport, everything's so secret.
Secret.
And so if I'm about to be a free agent, if I'm, say, Nate Diaz or Dustin Poirier, a lightweight who's at the top of his game, top five in the UFC, and I know that Eddie Alvarez just signed X amount for X years, blah, 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 doesn't that help everyone? Like, would you prefer if it was all public? Or is it one of those things where you don't want the world knowing your business?
No, I would prefer it's all public.
100%. So here we go. Let's start it. Let's start 100%. The trend.
It was all public. I kind of would. And if you are coming to free agency or close to it or having second thoughts or not sure what to do, Twitter me, Instagram me.
Okay.
I have the best agents in the whole game. In the whole game, by far. There's no one even close. Long-term thinkers, not trying to get a money grab, not trying to make a couple thousand bucks off a fighter. Long-term thinkers with long money and are able to have the resources to be able to do things the right way. And we did take some risk, but I do have an awesome team of agents, attorneys, and people at Boundary Group who are incredible.
It sounds like the deal is incredible. Do you think you could have gotten even more had you beaten Dustin Poirier, or do you get the sense that they were paying you top dollar regardless of what happened in that fight? Like, in the end, did your value not decrease at all?
No.
Wow.
No.
That's incredible.
It increased, if anything.
Really? How so?
Because of how long I've been in the game. If a promotion comes to me and tries to value me off of what I did in one fight.
Yeah.
From my whole career, I won't even sit down and talk to – they're short-term thinkers. I would never sit down and talk to that promotion.
Okay.
I would say, you're kidding me. We're dealing with one fight here, which is like a speck of what I was able to do in the last 15 years. I could have been sick. I could have – so many things could have been happening. You can't judge a fighter off one fight. It needs to be his last contract, to be honest with you, to see – how he did over the last contract to see how a fighter is going to perform in the future. So I would never sit down with someone who thought that short term anyway.
Okay.
And discuss a contract.
When's your first trip out there?
I'm going to head to Singapore November. I think I leave November 5th. Me, my wife Jamie, and Lloyd are going to head out and go visit the fans.
Okay. And when's your first fight?
We didn't make a date yet, but I think we're going to go like probably February, March of 2019.
Okay. So why such a break?
Well, I have to get out there.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, we're going to do our first trip out there. I never took the trip out there. So it's all unfamiliar territory. I want to take a trip, get comfortable, meet the fans, come back home. And, you know, I'm already training with Ricardo and Mark and everybody, you know, doing once, twice a day, depending on what day it is. And, so probably 19. Okay. I like my holidays anyway. I have four kids at home. So
yeah. And any opponents being discussed so far?
No opponents. Polls came up, and I'm going to assume everyone's good. You know, there's a lot of fans out there, the misconception that since the American fan doesn't know the guy who's fighting,
sure,
that they're no good. They're no name. They're junk. And, I'm the testament to that. That's false.
Right.
You know, I'm the guy who, I fought in Japan, came here to America, won a title, won another title. I was virtually unknown before I was able to win titles. So, I know that there's good fighters everywhere, excellent fighters everywhere. There's a 17-year-old kid in our gym right now, probably wipe out half the 145-pound division in the UFC.
Is that Zabit's brother?
Yeah, incredible.
That kid, I saw his in the amateur fight, his finish with the two spinning back kicks, insane.
So the best fighters in the world, they're not even known yet.
Right.
But there's a big world out there outside of America, outside of Asia, there's a big world out there. So fans should open up their eyes, and I'm looking forward to going to Japan and putting on some crazy, ridiculous, really fun fights.
I was actually going to ask you about Japan because I know they're going there. They haven't been there before.
I'm sorry, I said Japan.
Asia.
In
but general. They are going to Japan at some point.
They're going to Japan in
March. Is that important
March.
For you to maybe come back full circle a bit?
I 100% would love to fight in the Tokyo Dome and fight back in Japan. It was a really fun, exciting time in my life that I would love to repeat.
Is this your last contract, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay. It's not that long term.
It's long enough, you know. But I don't know.
Okay.
I would like to people ask me that a lot, but I didn't make a plan to get into this sport. I didn't say, I'm going to fight when I turn 19 years old, I'm going to do my first pro fight, and then at 20, I'm going to be a world champion. And I never made plans. This sport is the first time I found myself in a fight. I was in a ring at the Rexplex. We were fighting on a basketball court in front of 100 people. I couldn't have thought in my head more. This is a dead end. This is an absolute dead end. This is not a career. Yeah. This is not even good. What's going on here? So
now look at you.
To see where it's come. I'm gonna keep doing what I love to do, and I'm not gonna make plans. You know, I'm not a big planner.
I'll never forget when we were in Kensington. You told me that your family had that board of things that you guys put up, the things that you wanted. I think you said your wife wanted a new kitchen. She put it up there on the board, and all you wanted was to make $1 million, right?
So, no, that was
a different board.
No, I moved out of Kensington by then. Me, my wife never lived in Kensington.
No, I'm saying when we were in Kensington walking together, you told me the story.
Yes, the story.
That's all you wanted.
Yes, I wanted to make $1 million a fight. I wanted to, I think at that time I wanted to be like top five in the world. I wanted a certain kind of kitchen, certain kind of bathroom. I just put everything on this one board.
Yeah.
And, it was like a vision board of mine. And then, you know, it happened.
You got them all.
It all manifested. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. You got $1 million, right? You got the world titles. I'm assuming you got the kitchen because you have a newish house now, right?
I don't even care about half the other stuff now. I'm older now. I don't even care
about
the cars and the other half the other stuff that's on there. I could care less about, but, yeah, I have a beautiful family. My wife, my four children, that's all we need.
Yeah. Amen. By the way, I have to ask, you watched, I'm assuming, Khabib McGregor?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Excellent fight. Excellent.
Surprised?
Not totally. You know, I think if whoever was able to implement their game and put the fight in their location,
yes.
that's who was going to win dominantly. Like if I felt like if it stayed on the feet that McGregor would win dominantly, and I think if it went to the ground, Khabib would win dominantly. I think it went a little further than what I thought it would. I thought it'd be a faster fight.
And what do you make of the antics afterwards? boys will be boys, fighters will be fighters, or black guy on the sport?
No. This is, I mean, it's funny because, like, when you go to the circus and then the lion tamer gets his hand bit off, everybody says, oh, the lion went crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the lion went lion.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's right.
So when a fighter jumps over the cage and then fights break out, this is what probably would happen without a commission or without rule, like without some sort of control. These are fighters. I mean, fights happen inside the cage, outside the cage. I'm not sure. It's not how I would conduct myself, but it's a fight.
You watched that McGregor. Is he the same guy that you fought?
During the fight?
Yeah. There's a theory, 2 years off, way richer now. Not the same drive, not the same pep in his step, doesn't take it as seriously.
No. Look, we're horses, man. Like, you bet horses, the horse could eat something bad that day.
Yeah.
The horse could be arguing with his wife that day. The person can be arguing with their wife.
Sure.
You know, there's so many variables. There are humans out there fighting. So, like, people win, people lose, and then we try to make a science make a math problem out of it. All the time.
Right.
And there's no math problem to be had, you know. One guy wins, one guy loses, and sometimes it's for variable reasons. To me, it looked like, if I could say anything, Connor had a little bounce. When he fought like Aldo and Fulton said, there was a little bit of a bounce, like a little bit on his toes, a little bit of a bounce. And it looked like when he came at Khabib, I felt like maybe he didn't want to bounce so much to conserve energy. But I felt like the movement that he has and is capable of would have been the biggest threat to Khabib because it wouldn't allow Khabib to shoot. He would have to reset every time Connor made an angle. Every time Connor went lateral, he'd have to reset and shoot again. But Connor didn't have a pop. He kind of was right in front of him.
Your run in the UFC is unbelievable. Like, the guys that you fought, they gave you no cupcake fights. But is there a part of you that wishes you fought Khabib just to see how you would, you know?
Still, I think even...
Is that the one guy?
I think the timing is better now than ever. You know what I mean?
What do you mean?
Like, if I was there to fight him, I'd want to fight him now. I never really had a want or a need to fight Khabib. He was always kind of hurt.
Yeah.
And I always looked at Khabib like a guy, like, if you sign this contract, you're probably more than likely going to end up fighting a different guy.
Yeah.
So I never was gung-ho to sign a contract with his name on it.
Okay.
He always was injured
when
I first entered the UFC. It wasn't until recently that Khabib is able to put together back-to-back fights.
Right.
And he's fighting beautifully. He's fighting like, you know, like a killer right now. So now is the time when a guy like me would want to fight a guy like that, you know, but, you know, that ain't happening anytime soon.
Do you leave with any regrets from your run in the UFC?
Zero. I only regret things that I didn't do.
Okay.
I don't regret things that I did. I regret what I didn't do. And
anything that you didn't do that you regret?
No, I don't think so. I took on the best competition that I had available in front of me every single fight out. Whether I won or lost, I put my friggin' heart into my training sessions. I regret things that I said no to, and then I sit back and I go, oh man, I should have did that. But
sure.
I'm more of a ready, shoot, aim type person. I'm probably going to end up doing it and then figuring out how it's done during the process of doing it versus thinking about it too much and saying no.
Do you look back on your time with UFC with fondness? Are you?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good
great
run.
Great, like, not only just the fights, but good business. I made great money with the UFC. Got to fight some of the best guys in the world, and I get to do it all over again with a new promotion. I get to go fight for arguably one of the top promotions in the world, mm-hmm. and fight the best guys in that promotion.
And it's funny because I feel I just feel like something's about to happen with this promotion. And
big
I feel,
time.
Yeah?
Big time.
Anything you can tell us?
I can say that, I mean, it's rumors, but I'm not the last large signing in the next month or so.
Okay.
I think there's going to be a shift, a massive shift.
Wow.
Not just in, there's going to be a massive shift in power toward one championship.
That's a tricky one, right? One championship.
Yeah. I believe. Yeah. So a massive shift in power, and people are going to see that I made a great decision.
Yes.
Absolutely great decision.
That's what you were talking about. Long-term thinking.
Yeah.
You had the vision. But you're the first domino to fall, is what you're saying.
And I'm willing to be that. I'm willing to be part of something great. And we're on the cusp of something absolutely great.
And just to tie this whole thing back to the beginning, it kind of feels like in a way you were the winner that night in Calgary. You know, like I'm not trying to put someone else down, but like Dustin was supposed to have a fight, didn't materialize, and now he's just kind of, who knows? You know, Ferguson's trying to get a title shot. Who knows when he's ever going to fight for the belt? And now here you are, right?
Yeah,
in a weird way.
One thing that happens in this sport is guys do well. Guys, this guy makes $3 million. This guy makes $2 million. And one thing that's important is for you to just stay in your lane and know that your time's coming. You're going to make your amount of money. You're going to win your world title and pay no attention to what happened with this guy and how fast it happened. And you deserve this because he got it. That is such a – that's not the rabbit hole you want to go down in this sport. So stay in your lane. If you put the time in, the work in, you'll get your turn to be world champion. You get your turn to make millions of dollars, and the sport gives back to the people that give to it.
And be honest, how much did I annoy you since July every week asking you to come on the show? There was a point where you called, I would text you, but there was a point where you would just call me up and you're like, Ariel, I swear to God, if you text me one more time, I'm renewing my vows, I'm in Disney World, please, for the love of God, leave me the F alone. Admit it. You could admit it. I was annoying, right?
I did.
You called me up one time, you had to lay the smack down.
Look, I'm going to call you, all right? You don't call me. I'm going to call you. But no, we got it done. We got it done, and this will be the first of many. I'm excited to be here. I'm actually not too fond of coming to New York.
Why?
It's just too many people. There's way too much going on.
It's just like an hour train ride, right? It's nothing.
Yeah, I moved out of Philadelphia for this reason. I'm right outside of Philadelphia. I'm in like a farmland.
Gotcha.
And when I go to Philadelphia, it's becoming like New York traffic, like this now. So
who needs it?
Oh man, it. It bugs me out. So,
but you did get annoyed.
I do, but yeah. New York, a number of things. But I'm happy now.
And you renewed your vows.
We renewed our vows in Disney.
Wow.
Yep.
We're owned by Disney, so we can give a shout out. So, what'd you do? You and your wife and your kids went out there, and you did the whole thing all over again.
Super cool. Yeah, me and my wife's favorite place is the Polynesian there.
Okay.
So we went to the Polynesian. We got a photographer. Disney only allows you to have a photographer from them.
Okay.
But we got a photographer to come take pictures of us.
Wow.
And we were the only people in the whole park. So that was an experience in itself.
How'd you pull that off?
Well, only three people get to take pictures usually at Disney in a morning, but no other people book. So it was me and my wife in Disney by ourselves.
Wow.
So I bought the park out.
Wow. Well, now you're a high roller.
No, but, we did that, and then I had a really good friend. I'm sure he was the Bellator photographer, Eric Coleman.
Okay.
Eric, awesome dude, flew down, got a hotel, and followed us around the Polynesian and took pictures of me, Jamie, and my family and stuff like that. It was a super cool experience.
How many years have you been married?
This will be our 10th year married, but I've been with Jamie since I was 15, so we've been together 19 years.
So is that why you renewed? Because it was 10-year anniversary?
10-year anniversary.
I just celebrated my 10-year as well.
Yep.
When did you get married? 2008?
Yep.
What month?
September.
October.
Yep.
See, we're like kindred spirits,
Look at that. Yeah, you got to catch up with the kids, though.
Yeah, I got three.
You got some catching up to do.
And I've known my wife since I was 12.
Okay, you got me there.
I got you there. See, we've got a lot. There was a time where I feel like you didn't really trust me, and you were like, all right, if you come to Kensington, then we're boys. Now I feel like we're boys for life because I made the check, right?
I agree.
There was a moment where you were like, I don't know about this guy.
I didn't think you'd do it.
Didn't think.
I think you had it in you. You made the walk, though.
I made the walk.
I respect everyone who makes the walk.
As do I. And let me tell you something. I'm so happy for you because you've been a pioneer of this game. You did it your own way. You did it the hard way. You didn't do it the UFC way, so to speak. Like, you had to fight for everything. Underground King is not just a slogan. Like, that is you. You did it. And then you made it to the top of the UFC, which is not usually how it works. And now you're out almost pioneering this new era for one and getting big contracts and whatnot. Well done, man. I was really happy for you. I don't necessarily root for things to happen in this sport, but the fact that you did it, and you're doing it your way, is really impressive. So congratulations.
That's super cool. Thank you, man. It means a lot coming from you.
Thank you. Yeah, Eddie Alvarez, awesome. I appreciate it, my man. Thank you for making the trek. Yep. It means a lot. And we have this little banner over here that we're having our in-studio guest sign, and we're going to give it away to charity one day. So if you don't mind, on the way out, we have a marker or two over there if you don't mind signing it.
Yeah, I want to sign it. Just thank you.
Yeah.
To everybody listening and all the fans out there, like, overall it's been super positive, and we disregard all the any negative stuff anyways.
Yes.
But for the most part, everybody's been positive and sort of supports me along doing this, and trust me, man, this is one's going to be huge, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Can't wait. The new face of ONE Championship, Eddie Alvarez. Well done, my man.
Thank you.
If you don't mind signing that, and thank you so much for coming in. I know it's a bit of a trek, and there you go, right over there, Eddie Alvarez. Here we go. Let's see where he decides to sign. It's always very interesting. He's going to go right at the top, on top of everyone. My man, Eddie A. Look at that, Kensington Zone, future champion for ONE Championship, not ONE FC, ONE Championship. Get it right, Eddie. You're the man. All the best, my man. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Appreciate you doing this. What a guy. What a mensch, that Eddie Alvarez, stopping by here in studio. Congratulations to him. And as he said, and as I have heard, big things to come for that organization. I feel like one of the big stories of 2019 shall be the rise of ONE Championship, and not just overseas, not just in Asia, but also here in North America. Stay tuned. More to come. Thank you to Eddie for coming in studio. Thank you earlier in the day to Michaela Mayer for coming in studio. One guest to go. She's been in the news as of late. She was supposed to fight at UFC 230 against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. UFC 231. Then she got moved to UFC 230 in New York against Ajara Eubanks. Now she's back on UFC 231, December 8th in Toronto against Joanna Jędrzejczyk, currently training in California with Chris Cyborg. She's the one and only Valentina Shevchenko, and she joins us on the phone. Valentina, how are you?
Hello, Ariel. I'm good. Thank you.
It's great to talk to you as always, Valentina. I really appreciate it. And I know we spoke not that long ago, but so much has happened in your life since then. It's always a roller coaster with you, it seems. So we thought that you were going to fight Joanna. Then the fight got moved to Sejara in New York, then back to Joanna. When did you first find out that all this was happening? And initially, how did you feel about it all?
Oh, it was very crazy days, very different situation, because we already had like one training camp, then we switched for another training camp, then we had to go back. But, you know, like at the final of the day, I was feeling like, okay, I don't care anymore. Just let me know when you will be know for sure who it will be, when it will be, what day it will be, and just let me know. I will fight them, and doesn't matter like who it will be. Just let me know when you will make sure.
Were you disappointed when it went from, you know, yeah, you get the fight in New York, but it went from Joanna to Sejara? Did that disappoint you?
You know, it was. Of course, first I was already like focusing on first in on 8th of December with Joanna, and then they changed for November with Sejara. And you know, it's like two different style of opponents, because Joanna, she is a striker, Sejara, she is a grappler, and it's a little bit so it's different training camps that we have to have and different sparring partners. But we already, like, when in front of me they put a goal, I already looking for a solution. I look at what I have to do, and we start to change all the plans that we had, and like switch our training camp for different location. And then when I already was in there, like doing hard sparring, because it was like 1 month to go before the New York fight, and I already was in the training, and my weight already went down. So, and then we get notice that looks like it will be again December 8th. And I had to, like, relax a little bit because I will have, I do have more like about 2 months. And I had to relax a little bit and take a break, change my mindset for December 8th. And now we are here and I already like focus on different date. So it was a little bit like crazy things happening, but I hope nothing will change in like last time and we will fight December 8th.
So at any point did you or your management say, hey, like what's going on here? Like why do you keep changing the opponent, the date? What exactly is the reason for all of this and why am I being affected? Like why can't we just stay with the original plan, which seemed to be a fight that everyone was interested in?
You know, I could say management might could say this, but you know, I'm a fighter. I want to fight. And of course, if someone like said, okay, we have opportunity that you fight before. Okay, for me, it's better because I was preparing even for September. And during like, this last 6 months, I'm in full training camp. I don't have any like rest. Then go back to the training. No, my training, it's all this time is pretty intense. And of course, I want to fight now because I supposed to fight in September and I just need this to this explosion. And but you know, this is like me, like a fighter, like a person. I don't care. I just want to fight. Give me the fight, give me the opponent, and like make sure that this opponent will show up on the fight, and we will get a good fight. This is what's most important for me because I'm a martial artist. I'm not the who just speaking and doing nothing. I want the action. I want speaking less, but show my action more.
Would it be fair to say, in the end, though, the Joanna fight to you feels like a bigger fight, like you're more excited about that fight, that opportunity to fight her again?
You know, it will be a good fight because I think it will be good high-level striking fight. And like everyone knows Joanna, we know Joanna, that she very responsible and now she don't have to cut too much weight for her. Even more, she has more opportunity to relax a little bit and get her like good trainings with no cutting too much. And if before I was thinking like, oh, maybe my opponent will show up or don't show up. For now, I'm thinking this is not the problem, but I have to be worried.
You are 3-0 against her in Muay Thai, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Will you watch those fights in preparation for this fight?
For my Muay Thai fight?
Yeah, your three previous fights against her. I know it's in a different sport, but will you watch those fights? Will you take anything away from those fights in preparation for this fight?
You know, I don't even have to watch this fight because every my fight I remember very, very good. Not only with her, but I'm speaking about every my fight. And of course, it's past years from that fight and she improved a lot and I was not staying on the place. So it was a very good time for us and I think it will be very nice finally to fight her in like MMA rules. But I think how I said, I think it will be very good high level striking fight.
What years were those fights in? It's very hard to find information on those particular fights. Do you remember the years that you fought her?
Yes, first time it was World Championship in Bangkok, Thailand, 2006. Then next year it was the same World Championship, 2007. And the next year, 2008, we fought in South Korea in Seoul.
Okay, so the last time was 10 years ago and more. So a lot has changed since then.
Of course, it's not just for me, not just for her, it's for everyone, yes.
Okay, and right now you're in California, correct?
No, we just get back to Las Vegas.
Okay, but you were in California. You were training with Chris Cyborg, right?
Yes, we did. We trained with her. We did several trainings, and we plan to get more trainings together.
And how did that come about? Did she reach out to you? She, of course, is fighting Amanda Nunes. You have a history with her. We just received some photographs of you two training together, which is a very cool sight to see. How did this all come about?
We already was speaking about this like long time ago, but right now it's a good moment, good timing, because she's preparing for a health fight with Amanda, and I'm preparing to my fight with Joanna. So everyone, she and me, we need like good quality sparring partners, and this was all about it. And Joanna, now she's training with Amanda. So I think very good for us.
Yes, I like it a lot. Now, was this your first time training with Chris?
Yes.
Did you actually spar?
We did trainings. We did training sparring and like different exercises. Not only like you put and you go like free all 1 hour long, but exactly exercises where or what it will be helpful for the fight. And some kind of like free sparrings and like all together different work.
In this photo that was released today of you two in the cage together, she looks way bigger than you. Do you have any idea how much she weighs in this photo compared to you?
I didn't ask, okay. But of course there's a difference because I fight in 125, she fight in 145.
Yeah.
This is obvious. We will have a difference in weight classes for sure.
Did you enjoy the experience of training with her?
Of course, like I said, Chris, she's not fighter who just recently started her career. She fights a long time ago, same as me. I started my MMA career, like first fight in 2002. And then like we have all this common like experience. We have the same kind of spirit of the fight, of the training. And I like because she has the same like mindset, and she's like all about the training to make everything correct. So she has good speed, good power, and it was very nice because everyone we are need good quality sparring partners, and when you are on the training camp, you want it. You just it's very helpful for everyone for their fights.
Another training partner of yours in the past, Rose Namajunas, has two wins over Joanna. Will you be training with her for this camp as well?
We are still figuring out the training camp, what the like main part we're going to do, and we are still on this. For now, I'm saying next few weeks, maybe days, I'm going to stay in Las Vegas, and from here we will see where we go next.
Okay. And your sister, Antonina Shevchenko, is going to make her official UFC debut a week before your fight in Las Vegas against Ashley Evans-Smith. Do you like that you guys are fighting close to each other so that you can peak at the same time? Is that good for you guys?
For me, it would be the best to fight on the same event.
Oh, wow.
On the same fight card, for sure, because it will be like the same kind of preparation, and we will be in the same place. But being like so close, it's fine for me. Of course, I will be on her fight, and I will be in her corner, and then she will finish her fight. So literally on next day we will go to my fight, like all together, my team, she, my coach, and this is nice, a little bit like intensive and about timing, but we will make it because it's very important to stay each other and support each other.
Yeah, I know some siblings like the Pettis brothers have said they don't like to fight on the same card. So it's interesting to hear you say that you would actually prefer to fight on the same card. Hopefully, if all goes well in the future for both of your careers, you can make that dream into a reality.
Why not? Yes, for sure. It will be everything possible. So it will be very exciting for both of us to fight in the same card.
Well, I think December is one of the best months ever for women's MMA in the history of women's MMA with your fight on December 8th and with Cyborg versus Nunes. And one good thing, I would imagine, as far as you are concerned, they have another flyweight fight on the card as well. Caitlin Chookagian will be fighting Jess Guy. So if anything happens, hopefully you finally get a fight and we finally get to see you, because I know it's been very frustrating for you. I'm sure you're very happy about that, right?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, even I'm sure that this fight with Joanna will happen for sure. It's every time it's good to have some backup, and I will know that doesn't matter what, I will fight. This is the best part of it, but from other side, you have to prepare for a little bit more, not only for one your opponent, what you have, but a little bit more and like extra, just in case if something changes.
All the best to you, Valentina. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I know I bother you guys a lot, but it's always great because you've been in the news as of late to have you on and get your side of the story. Good luck in training. Can't wait for this fight. I can't say it enough. I am so looking forward to your fight against Joanna. I can't wait for it. So best of luck in training, and then we'll see you out there in Toronto on December 8th.
Thank you very much, Ariel. Have a good day. See you. Bye-bye.
All right. There she is. Valentina Shevchenko. Massive fight coming up on December 8th. I love that fight. Man, do I love that fight. I love both those fights. Brian Ortega versus Max Holloway in the main event for the featherweight title, and then Joanna versus Valentina. Look, I'll say it again. I feel bad for Sajara Eubanks. I think that, you know, she was kind of a pawn in this whole thing, and she agreed to fight after Joanna agreed as well. But you cannot tell me, and if anyone is being serious, you cannot tell me that Joanna versus Valentina isn't the best fight that they could put on right now at 125. It very much is. It just is. Because of Joanna's pedigree at 115, it's just such a big fight. And it's a great way to get that division back on track, because it's been a bit of a clunker thus far. It's a bit of a shame that Valentina hasn't fought, you know, more than once this year. And the last time she fought was back in February. And then, she, you know, she'll fight in December. So it's, you know, she had that massive break where she looked so good against Priscilla Cachoeira. But hopefully we will get to see her in action December 8th in Toronto at the Scotiabank Center. It's no longer the Air Canada Center. And then we get the main event between Max Holloway and Brian Ortega. All right, that does it for the interviews. Hold the music, Jake, okay? Don't get trigger happy over there. I'm just telling people what's to come. Post-show coming up in a matter of minutes. We'll be taping that, and then it will be available to you on iTunes, YouTube. And by the way, let's give a shout-out, if we can, to the great team over at ESPN, the ESPN audio team in particular, led by my man Anthony, who gets the audio. You know, everyone loves to bellyache about things. Change, change, change. Oh, you're so sad about change. The audio for this program on iTunes and all the other platforms is up literally in seconds after I say goodbye. And that wasn't always the case for various reasons. Not trying to knock anyone, but the system that they have over in Bristol to get this audio up is incredible. It really is. And so I want to give a shout out to the audio team led by my friend Anthony, who is manning the ship over there. They do a phenomenal job. So once this show's over, we'll tape the post show. It'll be on the audio platforms, the usual ones, ESPN app, ESPN.com, iTunes, Stitcher, etc. And that'll be with New York Rick. This show will be up on all the usual platforms. And then, if all goes according to plan, at around 5, I'll be taping an extra interview that'll be up. But I'll save the announcement for that till later. If you're listening to all this, watching all this live, you will know who it is. But I just don't want to really jinx it. We have a lot to discuss on the post show. We'll talk a little PFL. We'll talk a little UFC 230. Perhaps some Khabib Conor news. The NAC hearing is coming up on October 24th, so that's in 2 days. Don't expect a ton of news to come out of that, but there could be some developments. There's a few other things going on. Amazing fight added to UFC 232, Tom Dukinois against Nathaniel Wood. I love that very much. And, of course, the UFC is back this weekend in Moncton, New Brunswick. Anthony Smith against Volkan Ozdemir. Artem Lobov against Michael Johnson. Another card in Canada filled with some solid Canadian fighters. So after a couple weeks off, the UFC back in Eastern Canada this weekend. We'll talk about that as well with New York Rick. Now you can hit my music. What a great day it has been. Two in-studio guests. Love the in-studio guests. If I could do the entire show with in-studio guests, that would be the dream. That would be the real dream. But today, having Eddie Alvarez come in, having Michaela Mayer, having an Olympian in studio, having a Bellator champion, an Elite XC champion, a Bodog champion, a UFC champion, to anyone who thinks that Eddie Alvarez took the easy way out, that Eddie Alvarez is fading into obscurity, anyone who thinks that Eddie Alvarez made a wrong move, you are so sorely mistaken. And I'll call you a mark. Absolutely. I'll call you a mark. And also a message to all the loyal Khabib fans out there. I love you all. You guys have to be the most passionate and delusional fans in the history of mankind. I have never been criticized more about a fight from both sides. You're anti-Connor, you're pro-Connor. You're anti-Khabib, you're pro-Khabib. I don't know what to make of this whole thing. It's so confusing. I think that means I'm doing my job. But my oh my, do you guys get upset very quickly. I love Khabib. I'm as loyal as it gets. Don't get it twisted. Don't get it twisted, my friends. We'll talk about that more on the post show. I have a lot to say about that. But for now, we shall say goodbye. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you so much to Chris Weidman, Ryan Bader, Ally Quinta, Megan Anderson, Michaela Mayer, Darren Till, Eddie Alvarez, Valentina Shevchenko. Thanks to all of you. If you missed anything, check them out. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, all those places and more. Back next week. Until I say peace. Bye-bye.